things are good now. I mean, you know, we have a normal relationship, and, you know, so but it was some strain for a while. But, you know, it was tough. It was interesting. We went through a lot of nonsense to get to that point.
Sorry, I'm no. There's this Asian that she really wanted, and she's finally got the person, because you can't get with Asians to read your stuff, and you have to like write them. She just said, "I must have you. I must represent you. I must be able to extol your fabulosity from now on to the end of time. I'm halfway through Skin and Bones. I'm in fucking awe. This is an imaginative tour de force. Thank God I don't write blurbs. I suck. To quote my pale Bible poem, I will get in a monkey knife fight to have you for a client." It goes on for another paragraph or two.
What is this about?
My wife has just finally got this high-level agent to read her stuff. She's an author.
That's cool.
Let me show you guys something here. This is a marvelous.
Make sure I get that back, sir.
Yeah. Make sure I get it back. I wish I had them all organized here, but I can give you. This is a direct mail, unsolicited solicitation from Portia. Okay. And you can see the...
And you didn't invite yours to do it. Yours was like...
Yeah.
You're an owner, but...
Yeah, now I don't know what their select was, right? But, so here's the paperweight that's customized with my name on it. And here is the cover letter. And here is the little brochure that was in the top here, right? Now, from Portia, our introductory packet, actually, was... modeled after a mailing that I got from Portia when they released the Cayenne. Okay? And it was a very elaborate package with a VHS videotape at the time that was all about come to the free test drive deal. And again, this is for the release of the 9/11. And I also got a mailing in a box about this size with a metal street sign. And it was for the release of the new Cayenne, the new whatever they call it, Cayenne S or whatnot. And the headline on the letter on top of the street sign, which was again in a box like this in foam, said, "You now can officially own the road." Oh, and it had a street sign. And then there's another piece that I got recently that was like an etching book. So it's like an artist etching book. But it was an etching book of their new four-door, you know, I forget what they call it, but it looks like a 911, but with, you know, four doors. And this again, this one was September, today is September 8th, but it was just a cold solicitation for the new 911. Wow. Okay? Now, I don't know what their list is. I'm on my third 911, and I've got a 911 Turbo now, so... And none of them have, yeah, you mentioned, I haven't bought any of them new, right? I try to avoid buying new cars. But, you know, so somewhere they have the database of, you know, maybe this went to 911 Turbo owners or 911 owners or, you know, I don't know. You know, the whole purpose of the Cayenne was for people like me, well, not like me because I use it as a winter car, but for the guys who have 911s to leave it parked in the garage all winter so that they have an alternative so they can still drive a Porsche in the winter. So they spend a fortune.
I think it comes from the dealership's mailing list.
Service
list.
No, I imagine it's. Well, of course, they can't, even if they didn't have that list. You can buy a list by VIN, so you could buy a list of everybody who owns a Mercedes or whatever.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, you can buy the DMV list in most states. Probably, that was from the dealer purchase. Because two of the three that I've had, I bought from a Porsche dealership. One was from a Mercedes dealership, but probably it was from purchase records. So, but you can imagine, I don't know what that cost per piece.
Mercedes?
No, never.
You know, I had, my Ford.
Yeah.
Ford even sends you stuff. I mean, Ford sent me two folding chairs.
Yeah.
Like football games and stuff like that. And about once a year, they'll send you some gift of some kind of water bottle or something.
Porsche, last I knew, was the most profitable car company in the world. Who was busy gobbling up VW. So, you know, the VW group is VW, Audi, Lamborghini, and Bentley. So I think they're up to 35 or 40% of the VW group, even though they're about 10% the size of the VW group. But they're, you know, much more wildly profitable. I think it's very impressive, though. I mean, that's at least four...
50 bucks.
Yeah.
Probably 50 bucks at least.
Yeah. You know, four or five mailings like that that I've received from them in the last year. So, and again, I mean, instead of them hitting like the entire market, they know what their target audience is, right? So they're going after a, you know, a narrow target audience for that, and they're still, you know, doing, you know, magazine ads and stuff, but they, you know, really try to get your attention on that stuff. So it's good. So, what do you guys think of our new administration? What do you think of the Obama administration so far?
I'm actually big
fan. Are you?
I am.
Interesting.
The jury's out. We'll wait and see.
Interesting.
I think he's already made some major errors and way too soon.
Well, I would say it this way. All of my fears of...
That's fine.
Oh, okay. All my fears about what he's was going to do on the war and terror and international relationships have been mollified, and all of my fears of a rampant socialistic government that's going to take all of our money away have been ratified. So this is an interesting article in the Wall Street Journal today. It's actually talking about how all the financial journalists got it wrong. But it says, I'll just pick up in the middle. It says Milton Friedman, musing on the subject in a 1994 TV interview with C-SPAN that was just recently rebroadcast, says the occasion was the 50th anniversary of the publication of The Road to Serfdom. As he looked around, Friedman marveled at the world's perverse refusal to learn certain lessons, even when history itself drove them home. Everybody by then had learned that government was too large, he said, but countries kept on growing government anyway. Friedman may have misread the direction things were moving in 94, but the question he raises is still a good one. Bad ideas and clueless pundits often do get on top, and they stay there, sometimes hailing incentives and accountability, even despite all manner of rebukes handed down by history itself. Well, that was an interesting comment. So the... if you look at history, when Bill Clinton was elected, is, if you remember, Bill Clinton was the reason for the rise of Newt Gingrich, the Contract with America. So if you remember that, what we had was, when Clinton was elected, we had 2 years of a Democratic House, a Democratic Senate, and Bill Clinton. And then the next election that came around, Newt and the Contract for America wrote in, and then we had prosperity for 6 years. And so I think those who are fans of Obama would have to hope for a Republican Congress and Senate to offset his most whack job ideas that are coming down the pike. And the crisis right now is a marvelous opportunity for all of us. But you know, the risk we have is that, I forget what the number is, but it's, I was just reading this, 1%, 5%, 5% of the population currently pays over 40% of the taxes, 1% of the population, what was the number there? No, maybe it's this. This, no, that's not right.
20-something.
20-something percent, thank you. And the top 20% is something in the range of what, 80%? Don't quote me on those numbers. That one I was just looking at recently. So it's something to the effect of, you know, the whole problem with the whole tax the rich thing is the rich are already paying for everything, right? You know, the other thing is, if you guys are sitting in the room, you should be really scared of the fact that you're now the enemy, right? Because anybody making a decent living is now the official enemy of our House, Senate, and President all put together. So, if you're not paying attention to that, you know, all your problems with Texas, now multiply that towards your ability to make a living. Okay? And as soon as you have any little success in your business, we're now the enemy. So you got to be aware of that, right? There's this big populist uprising. And, you know, if they really want to have a populist uprising, they should let GM and AIG and all those guys fail, so we really have capitalism, but that's another story. So anyway,
I'm with you.
So it's going to be an interesting year, okay? And in my prediction would be is that this is kind of a repeat of the Clinton era, which I think Obama will be a marvelous leader as long as he has some adult supervision. And so as soon as we get rid of Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and have some adult supervision on the other side, I think it'll be a wonderful thing. Because I think he'll be a marvelous, inspirational leader who has not a clue about economics. There's also another thing I think we should be careful of is who in here would put a lawyer in charge of your business? Would you do that?
I would consider it.
Would you? Why?
Well, because I know a lot of good lawyers.
Yeah?
These are guys
who are good business people?
I wouldn't say that. I don't know.
Okay. Who are good at marketing and good at sales and good at business operations and good at people management
some
are good
are
lawyers. Yeah. Are pretty what?
Are pretty wealthy. So.
Well, from managing a business or from winning big cases?
I couldn't distinguish those two things.
And yeah, well, big difference.
A lot of them work for, you know, it's the ones who go into practice that have problems that when they're working for a big law firm, the law firm has the right business formula going that keeps them. It's like Charlie Lee. Charlie Lee worked for a big firm, made good money. Mm-hmm. Now he's doing his own and still making good money.
Yeah, but that wasn't my point, is we put lawyers in the Senate, put lawyers in the Congress, elect lawyers who have no business experience whatsoever, and then expect them to run the economy. So we now have a bunch of lawyers getting ready to run GM, getting ready to run Chrysler, running AIG, telling Citibank how to run their business, telling, the whole story. And, of course, it was all the lawyers that got us in this mess to begin with, because they're the ones that legislated the way the banks had to loan money that created the crisis.
That's right.
So, it is interesting. How's business so far for the year for everybody? Booming, I hope?
Yeah.
Booming?
Yeah.
Okay. So, when you turn on the TV every day and you hear about the what a crisis there is and how you should be broke, you are ignoring them?
I stopped turning the TV
on.
Yeah.
Watch it now.
Yeah. Here's the deal from our perch at NAPNA. You know, we have the 80-20 rule, you know. There's the 80% that haven't felt an impact at all, or else they're doing phenomenally well. There's the bottom 20% who are belly up, and there's the rest of the 60% of the 80% who are screaming to high hell about how horrible things are. Right now, my assessment of that would be is most of the ones that are screaming about how horrible it is. It was just as horrible for them a year ago, except now they believe it worse, right? So they have a
now they have an excuse.
They have a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Okay.
Yeah. And they have a self-fulfilling prophecy to just kind of sit down and do nothing because they're convinced that the world is imploding anyway, so why bother? But that is an opportunity. Why is it an opportunity?
Market share.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, one, and I don't like to think about our industry that way, but it's an opportunity to pick up market share. Most importantly, it's an opportunity to get all the whack jobs, creeps, and idiots out of the business.
It's a way of pruning our branches, just like
I thought you'd like to know that Bruce is went belly up.
Who did?
Bruce, the Asian guy that I brought with you a few years ago.
There's a surprise. Yeah.
Well, we have one by us that I got a nice treat the other day. It's a woman that's been a thorn in my side for a long time. Not necessarily a competitor. I mean, she doesn't really affect much except for draw some of my market share. I walked into Dunkin' Donuts to get my wife a cup of coffee, and she's standing behind the counter serving me coffee. So that was good.
Yeah.
Did you ask her what time classes start?
I did ask her how the school was doing.
What'd she say?
Things are tough right now. We need more money to pay the mortgage for the house. So that was the answer I got.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't mean to be overly harsh about, you know, drawing a combative line, which, you know, Eric, you bitched at me a little bit about it last year. But see, the reality is there's a whole bunch of people, and it's not just our business. In every business, they shouldn't be there to begin with, right? And if you have a booming market, it helps those guys limp along as well, right? But when the market crashes, it kills them. And that's a useful thing. And it's also why the government shouldn't be like bailing out people who can't swim on their own. And there is an argument that some of these, you know, could have a cavalcade effect that would be, you know, that would be harmful. But mostly, you know, Newt Gingrich on Fox recently called it capitalism on the way up and socialism on the way down, and I think that's a pretty good analysis of some of what's going on. But you know, the guys that are being flushed out of the business is, if you look at this, it's really hard not to have access to all the kind of educational materials you could possibly need in order to have good sales skills, good marketing skills, good business skills. And so many of these guys rebel against it because of whatever self-righteousness they may have, or they're just too stupid to bother. And I'm not saying they're both in the same category. You know, there's both. But, you know, it really is not true that just like being a good martial artist means you're also running a good business. It's also certainly not true that just because somebody is running a small school, they're running a quality school. They have this weird perspective of, I have my 20 students, but they're all good. And, you know, I don't know about you and me, but I know your school and my school and Keith Hafner's school and Dave Kovar's school and Steeple Valley School are as high a quality as I've ever seen. And, you know, that's with thousands of students, not 20. So you've got to be careful about that. Well, but what are some of the opportunities right now? So the school is booming. What are some of the other opportunities?
Well, there's definitely a good opportunity to reposition yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, people are shifting their discretionary ideas into what are considered, you know, non-discretionary ideas. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. if you can shift the market perception about what you are, you know, like I think I'm following my high footsteps in the sense mm-hmm. of, I think education is the way to go.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And if you can use this opportunity mm-hmm. to say, you know what, we're not an after-school sport. We're an educational opportunity
right.
for your child.
Right.
It's a really good time to do that because people are looking for that.
Yeah. Well, it is clearly true that people are cutting discretionary dollars, right? The same reason that you can get deals in Maui and you can get deals in Breckenridge right now is that people are hoarding money because they're convinced that the world is ending, right? So they're building their savings. So that's exactly right. If it's a choice and I'm a 25-year-old or a 27-year-old and there's this hobby I always wanted to do, whether it's flying lessons or martial arts or something like that, people are hoarding that, but they're not making the same kind of decisions about life-changing activities and efforts for the kids, right? Yeah. And the
well, they're scared.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're looking at that as a way of self-defense. I mean, of defense for their kids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they don't have to experience this fright, the fear that they feel in themselves.
Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So I totally agree with that. That's a direction for us to go. It's also a marvelous opportunity that if you haven't, and Eric, I know you have, but and you're thinking about it, it's a marvelous opportunity to buy your facility or buy a facility because there's a lot of property owners who are running scared as well. The government did just pump a bunch of money into the SBA indirectly. They're starting to buy up the 7B and 504 loans, right? So apparently, I forget the stat, but somewhere between 25 and 50%, there's a huge drop in SBA lending last year with the banking crisis, with a 50%. They just passed something a couple days ago. They're pumping up. And what they're doing is they're buying them in the secondary market. So they're buying the 504 loans, which is the real estate base, and the 7B loans. So there's now going to be some more liquidity in that. So there's an opportunity there. And, of course, there's going to be a lot of properties that are either distressed or, you know, the owners are just looking to unload it. So it, you know, it's a good opportunity there. What other opportunities are there?
Save on advertising. There's not as much noise that you have to cut through, and then mm-hmm. you get all kinds of great deals. I know I have.
That's exactly right. And make sure you take advantage of that. You know, I mean, on most media, paying the rate card is not normal anyway. But right now you can get cut rate. I mean, even for home purposes, I know Black Belt Magazine, you know, me and several of the other people we've got a trade with them, but they're going for about $1,000 a page right now. Well, you know, they were going for you know, I was buying remnant space, and so I basically would just give them the ad and say, whenever you have an empty space, I'll pay you $100,000 for it, and then I can negotiate that into 3-6 months. So, but that's just a microcosm of what's happening in the newspapers. I know in Denver, the Rocky Mountain News just went belly up. So,
I heard that.
Yeah, we went from one paper to two papers. Well, usually that would be anti-competitive, except for the fact that, you know, the other one may not be long for this world either, right? And so there's a lot of market where the newspapers are questionable, or they're going from two to one.
Our local newspapers are in a ton of trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, people are going, they're getting their news off the internet these days.
Well, satellite radio and the internet and 24-hour TV and there's but predominantly it's the internet that's killed them and especially their big profit centers. I mean, their big profit centers were like classified ads, and now Craigslist is free or nearly free. So a lot of it has been those profit centers have been killed too. So that that's an opportunity. What else is an opportunity right now?
It's actually forced me to do something which I haven't done in the last few years, which is look at costs.
Yeah.
I've cut $10,000 worth of costs each month.
That's interesting. How did you do that?
Reduce staff that was unnecessary. Mm-hmm. Reduce the advertising that was marketed.
Did you get him to do that? For his 32 staff members? I'm sorry, go through the list. So you cut some staff.
Cut some advertising, cut some things that in my mind were good, but like Dan Kennedy's Gold Plus program. Mm-hmm. I realize I'm never listening to the CDs, so I get just as much out of the gold programs.
Right.
And so on and so forth.
Right.
I just went down the list. It was
right.
$10,000 to $12,000 a month that I was really
not utilizing. Right. Well, and you illustrate two things. One is, you illustrate what the problem is out there, is people, are cutting discretionary dollars. And some of what you cut, if there wasn't a tight economy, you wouldn't have cut, right? But on the other hand, it's a marvelous opportunity to look at everything on your profit and loss sheet, on your balance sheet, and really review everything. And the big disciplinary factor is, when the economy is booming again and when the gross has doubled, is
keeping it down.
Yeah. That's right. Because it's really easy. I mean, we both know this. I mean, it's really easy for the gross to go like this and all the expenses to go like this. And you say, well, why isn't the net bigger, right? And especially with headcount. I mean, it's really easy to tolerate people who aren't performing, or hire people who aren't necessary, or have 32 people on staff.
How many schools with the 32?
Oh, 17. Well, maybe one.
One school.
No.
32 is an exaggeration.
How many? I think
20.
How many? 18.
He forgot. 18 at one school.
Where's your school? It's not Connecticut. Most of them are like teenagers in 3 hours, but they're 17. Well, you know what? With that kind of staff, you need to do our program where they pay you to work for.
They do.
And then I
pay
them.
What's that?
And then I pay them.
No, he wasn't talking about that second piece. Period. Period. Period in a sentence.
And we do have some that we bring on board, but not 18. Because the idea is that.
Well, we can beat that number. How many active students do you have?
283.
Okay, and then you have the after-school care. How many are in that?
27.
Okay, so he needs a full-timer and a part-timer for after-school care. And then he needs a full-timer, two full-timers for the martial arts school, part-timer receptionist, maybe a couple part-timer instructors. So that comes out to be, what, seven?
Yeah. And I have one less full-timer than that, and a bunch of part-timers that make up for it.
Well, I'm not sure that makes up for it. I think you got to be careful about that. Does five part-timers make one full-timer? And often not. And what a lot of people look at is like instructors, Would you rather have one guy who's there all the time, who's paid a percentage and is incented to chase down renewals and upgrades and retention, or seven people that cumulatively are making the same amount of income? Well, when you have seven, none of them are chasing their renewals and worrying about retention and worrying about testing. They're putting in their 4 hours, right? So I think almost always you need two two sharp people to run a school.
If you're going to be there, you need one.
Yeah, in addition
if
to yourself.
If you're not going to be there, yeah. you need two that are on commission, mm-hmm. that have a way, that are actually adding to the gross of the school. And if they're adding to the gross, they get commission. Mm-hmm. If they're not, mm-hmm. so it's a real simple process. Who should get the commission? Well, the ones that are generating the gross.
Yeah.
And if somebody's not generating gross, then they go to an hourly. Mm-hmm. Because they're just part-time.
But I would say up to 300. You really need, you know, two sharp full-time people. And if you're running the school day in and day out, that one of them is you. And, you know, you need somebody to cover the front desk and answer the phones for 3 or 4 hours a night. And, you know, and especially if you have a rotating curriculum and a quality leadership training program. Most of the others are not even just volunteers. They're the paying you, you're not paying them, you know, category. The ones that you're paying, mostly teenagers or?
Yeah, it's a mix of, you know, people who are on my leadership program. These are people who would never go full time with me, but, mm-hmm. you know, have been in the leadership program paying an extra $100 mm-hmm. for a couple of years. And so by year three, they're paying a regular tuition because I'm paying them for them to work there. And it's just, it's a way of going back to some of the older guys and to keep them around and hold them accountable rather than having them volunteer. And for the younger guys, it's just my way of mentoring these kids and having mm-hmm. them take a little pride in what they do in terms of it being.
Well, when you say older guys, what age category?
We're not talking about adults. You know, we're talking about guys who are in their 40s and guys who are in their 30s.
You know, my rule of thumb, and it has always been, if it's a teenager that I'm trying to go work for McDonald's, right? If they're going to have to not be at the school as much because they're going to go, take a part-time job, is those are the ones that I'd like to put on some kind of hourly so that they don't, they don't abandon the thing. You know, the 40 and up, I can't tell you how many hours we have some of these adults putting into the schools. I mean, we have, they'll be the black belt.
They'd rather not get paid than to insult them and pay them 10 or 12 bucks an hour.
Yeah.
Because, you know, these guys, we have guys that help out mm-hmm. like that. And some of them have one day that they volunteer, like 3 or 4 hours, and others like 2 days. I mean, they like to do it. It's their hobby. And,
yeah, we have the same thing.
And they like the respect they get around the school, but they well, like doing it. But if I said, and I tried to pay them before, and they go, I understand how. Now, if you wanted to pay them, $50,000 a year or something, maybe they wouldn't be offended. But, paying them $8 to $12 or $15 an hour for.
Well, and the idea that people are more accountable because they're getting money isn't necessarily accurate. I find oftentimes it's the opposite. As soon as they're like getting money from me, they start looking at it like a job. And like tonight, we have the prep class that'll be here. I imagine Ron, Gene, and a couple of the others will be here. Well, those guys, God, I don't know. They probably
tournaments. They're always helping out for testing.
Yeah, they probably put in 60 hours a week, not a week, but a month. 60 hours a month, just because they like it. And if I start compensating them, I bet I'd burn them out. Right
now, what I do with those guys, I do give them new uniforms.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Equipment.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Unexpected, right? So it's, every now and then you just go. Give them something unexpected, take them out to dinner, give them a certificate for something, maybe now and then buy a uniform. But as long as it doesn't look like it's compensation, as long as it's not expected, it works better.
Have you read their book, Predictably Irrational?
No, but it's the same principle.
Yeah. It's a real good book, explaining all that.
Yeah. It's why slot machines work. It's random reinforcement. And if it was, I haven't read that book, but if it was like every fifth week they got something, now fifth week comes around and they don't get it, they're mad, right? But yeah, what was that? Predictably
irrational.
Yeah.
And it tells how leadership program works. It tells how you structure it. People make decisions and purchasing decisions based on a contract. That's the way human mind works, and it's irrational, but it's very, very predictable. For example, if you're going to go buy you got a contemporary home and you got a colonial home, and they're both excellent homes, everything looking good, same basic price range, whatever. Which one are they going to buy? Well, if you have another colonial home that's a little bit worse condition, even at a cheaper price, mm-hmm. overwhelmingly they buy the good colonial home because they have something to compare against. That's a better deal. and vice versa. If you were to get a contemporary that's a little bit worse, they'll overwhelmingly go to the contemporary home. Yeah. Because there's no two Christ comparisons. They even did it where they had guys go out to a bar, pick up women. Mm-hmm. And so you got this guy here and another guy that looks very similar to him, but not quite as handsome. But another guy had a completely different look that was equally handsome, but just different look. He got all the women because he was an upgrade from the...
Well, that's what happens back home anyway.
Right? Absolutely.
Anyways, that's the way it should be, ain't it?
He's going to plan that.
Well, it's like...
Not anymore. I'm being in trouble.
Yeah. You know, the practical application of the realtor is to always take them to the junker first.
Right.
You know, so when you take them to the house you think they're going to want, that it, you know, it looks that much better.
They were doing it in, one of the, Wall Street Journal, not one of the major publications, they ran a study. If you got the internet version, it was like $45 or $25 or something like that. Printed version was $125. Overwhelmingly, the people bought the cheaper one. I'm not going to have time to read it. I'll just pick it up on the internet. But when they ran it with, they gave them three options. Internet version, all just a print version, but then print and internet version, both together, for the same price, $125.
Yeah.
They overwhelmingly bought the $125 package. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Because it was more value for the house.
Yeah.
See, that's selling your program.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. But the okay, so we have opportunity one is to cut those ridiculous expenses. Example of cutting $10,000 out of the budget. What was that, 20% or so? What was your monthly budget?
Well, what happened is up until the last 6 months, we were pulling in an average of $70,000 a month. Suddenly, it dropped below 60.
So okay.
Like, well, out of necessity, let me. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting. Once that balanced, see, a lot of the stuff that, that he cut out of the budget was actually keeping the growth from being strong. You know, now think about that for a second. Is you start cutting people out that shouldn't be there to begin with? What happens? Well, you know, I've always found this. If I had a school, like take your example. Right at 300 people, and they'll always argue that they need more square footage and they need more people, right? And so now you have two really sharp full-time people making a good income, and you give them a third person. Now, does the gross increase 50%? No. What always happens is the other two guys work a third less because they can now split all the activity by three rather than by two, right? And I formalized that years ago as I said, well, okay, that's fine. You got X percent of the gross for payroll, 25%. And so if you want it to be 7%, 7%, 7%, and 3%, that's fine. If you prefer it to be, you know, 10-10 and or 10-12 and 3%, that's fine too. And, of course, they almost never say, well, yeah, we'd rather have a lower percentage with it with an extra person.
I wouldn't say 18 is the wrong number. I would say how much are you spending for. Mm-hmm. What percentage of your gross are you spending for, you know, for your payroll? And that would be what you'd go by, because you don't want that payroll percentage to be too high. If it is, you're out of proportion, and you either got to get the gross up to adjust for that percentage or to trim it down.
What's a good percentage for
25%. Okay.
Yeah. Of the gross.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you can let it creep up a little bit from there if that includes you. And of course, your compensation is also the net profit, right? So, but you know, my rule of thumb for 25% is with branch locations, right? So, you know, if it's 33 to 37, you're okay. If that means you're getting a pretty good sized check,
right?
But again, there is something to. I'd rather have one really good full time guy, who's really sharp, well trained. Because what happens if you have a whole bunch of part-timers? Do you train them 5 hours a week? Well, if they're only working 5-10 hours a week, you can't train them 5 hours a week, right? Do you hold them?
Call the Gonzalez to make sure, because Matt's here and we're coming in. So he wasn't. That's just a text.
Okay.
Well, no. There's no reason to go to Parker.
If nobody's going there. But he has a graduation at 6 anyway, so he should watch.
Yeah, they're fine. Bogged down in trivia. But I mean, but does that make sense? If you look at the people you have there, and you were bogged down with that, weren't you? You had a couple people who weren't really accountable about a year ago. Mm-hmm. No.
No, I've always had bare bones staff.
Yeah,
I did. Yeah. Remember we talked at ESA?
Maybe. Oh, that. Yeah. Okay.
And I got rid of that one girl that we talked about specifically.
That we used an example with Kennedy.
Yeah. Hey.
Well, we were just talking about this damn paternalism over here. I remember that. Well, good. So what is the biggest need that you guys feel you have to make sure 2009 is an all-time record? And by the way, as Eric just illustrated, all-time record net. You know, gross does not equal net, right? You know, so you want it to be all-time record net. And there's many different ways of getting there.
My net's actually up. I need a solid sales system.
Mm-hmm.
I've got, you know, I've just installed implemented systems in my school, and I need to, be faster at implementing stuff, and B, I need to systemize my sales process.
Well, who's doing your sales process?
I am.
Well, you're doing it all.
I know. Who's writing it, or who's implementing it?
Who's implementing?
I've got two people, one half-time, one full-time, who implemented it along with me.
Why do you have a half-time person touching the sales process?
Because she's not available full time.
Yeah, but why that person?
Non-personal answer.
Okay. See, the first thing is you never want to have a part-timer touching any of the sales, right? Now, you know, when I say that, that's probably an overgeneralization. You may have a part-timer answering the phone. I've always had a very extensive sales process for part-timers answering the phone. Is as soon as they ask any question that sounds like an info call, their response was, fantastic, let me get an instructor who can answer all your questions. My name is Amber. Can I get your name? Fantastic. Just in case we get disconnected and I get your phone number, and I'm going to get Mr. Blank for you. Can you hold just a second? And they go get somebody who's capable, right? But, you know, other than that, and I guess an overgeneralization would be also you can have a part-timer perhaps doing confirmation calls as long as you're pretty well trained on that. A lot of it comes back to this, though. It doesn't matter what the system is. If you don't have a elaborate training process that starts over every 90 days, right? And the problem, again, with part-timers is, I mean, you probably have an elaborate training process, teaching them forms and sparring and everything else, but you're not teaching them the stuff that they're actually touching that's impacting student quality, student retention, enrollments, renewals. So you've got to be very, 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 very careful about letting somebody who you don't have time to train ever touch any of that stuff. I mean, you know, all a sales system is really, I mean, wouldn't you agree it's one of a couple things, right?
It's the scripts and it's the interaction that the people have. And then it's the tools and automated contact processes that you can put in place to support, right? And so, you know, like you see a little poster out there. Here. Okay. Yeah, this little poster. Now, why have I done this? Why do we have all this crap that happens?
Why have you done the poster? Why do we have all that stuff that happens?
Well, both. Good question. Both. I mean, because in its own format, the poster is part of the sales process.
So I assume that the poster is there to sell franchises.
Right. And the stuff is there to make mostly the upgrade sale. in an automated way that abstents the process from being wholly dependent upon the human being following the script, right? So it's designed to be infomercials and audio CDs and webinars and teleconferences and stuff where everyone gets the same process, regardless of what the human being does with the script once they implement, right? But the other process is with the script, is if you don't really have somebody that you can 100%, you know, if you can't wake them up at 3 a.m., shake them awake and have them do the enrollment conference, they don't know it, right? So you've got to make sure you don't have somebody, you never have somebody where they don't 100% have the process, okay? Now, when you're looking at the process, I've always thought that when you're creating a sales system, there's two types of pieces. Piece number one is what I'll call generic sales training, right? So that's teaching somebody the basic principles of persuasion, tonality, pacing, all of that kind of stuff. And so, yes?
Really quick question. When you said to fix that form, what do you mean exactly? Make it work, or do you want me to rewrite the sales letter part? You don't need a sales letter part.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I thought. You want me to leave the door open? You
no.
Use the one?
No. Okay. But does that make sense? So that there's generic sales training, you know. So having them all periodically read Influence with Integrity, have them read Tom Hopkins, have them watching, you know, videotapes, audio tapes, having them read Zig Ziglar and so forth. And then there's the actual script that they're going through, right? But then there's also all the tools that you have them interact with. So when you're talking about developing a comprehensive sales system, what is it you feel like you're missing?
Well, really all of the above. I mean,
okay.
5 years ago, mm-hmm. I did all the sales.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then there was someone who came in, mm-hmm. and when I was busy, they took care of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was sort of slow abdication of mm-hmm. that job.
Mm-hmm.
Right
word to use.
I have two choices now. Mm-hmm. One is to take it all back over myself.
Right.
Or two is to create a system and which allows other people to do it in mm-hmm. a way that's going to be as effective as I'd like it to be.
Okay.
And I prefer option two.
Right. Now here's something else I'll throw in. If you're doing it all yourself, do you have every bit as much need to have a consistent sales system?
Well, the probably correct answer would be yes, mm-hmm. but my feeling would be not as much.
Why?
Well, just because, you know, I would stay on track with the things that I think are important in keeping the system working, but it's probably not true.
No. Yeah. See, the problem with owner-operator schools is that they start with, they don't keep track of the numbers because they feel like they know what's going on. And they don't keep track of like their sales ratios because they're doing it all themselves, and they feel like they know what's going on. They don't have to like document it because obviously it's not me. It's, you know, everything else is fine.
And even if it was, then what could you do about it?
Well, you fix the process. You know.
Yeah, if you know that problems exist.
Yeah, and there's several choices. You know, one is fix the process. Two is to fire the offender or put them into a different role. And even if it's you, right? I mean, if you're an effective business person and you know you're in the role that you aren't good at, you can always get somebody else to do, you know, that role. And, of course, what most martial arts school owners do is they decide that they want to go hire somebody to run the office for them. And so they can be the great teacher that they are, and they put somebody in the office who's, is horrible, but they think that their role is to be on the floor, and so they get somebody else. But you need a consistent process. I mean, I don't know how many info calls and how many enrollment conferences I've done in my life, but you know, if I walk into an enrollment conference, I want to use our sheet, so I want to make sure I don't miss anything. And I want to make sure I take a few deep breaths and smile at myself in the mirror and, you know, refocus on what the outcome is, or else there's too many things going on.
And it gets lost, right? I mean, every one of us has had the experience of there's 9 things going on. You got somebody, you know, the wife is annoyed with you on the other line, and you answer an info call. And if you're not careful and you don't follow the script, you know, that's probably not the most productive one you've ever had, right? So you've got to be real careful. It doesn't matter whether it's you or an employee, more important for an employee, but that you have a very consistent process so the info call gets handled the same way every time, the first intro gets handled the same way every time. And if you're doing it the same way every time and it's not working, you know, that you tweak the process until you get it to work better, right? You know, if you listen to me do an enrollment conference and you listen to me do one 8 years ago and 5 years ago and 3 years ago and today, and assuming that, you know, I had my little, you know, outline in front of me and I had, you know, warmed up a little bit, they would be within a comma or two of being identical. I mean, there'd be no difference, you know. You know, the only thing that would be different is I'd say, well, Joey is 7 now. You know, the name would change and the age would change. That's it, right? Everything else would be identical. And if it's not that consistent, then, you know, you're kind of, you know, playing it by the seat of your pants and winging it. And, you know, and there are people who can do pretty well by winging it, but you won't have consistency by doing that. I mean, it really needs to be the same process all the time.
And I kind of feel like that's where I'm at. I winged it, and I grew my business to where I grew it.
Yeah.
And now it's not growing anymore.
Right.
So I can take it to the next level. I have systems.
Oh, absolutely. And then the question is do you want to systemize it and you're the implementer, or do you want to systematize and other people are the implementer?
Well, my feeling about it is I want to systemize it so that I want to be implementing it as I systemize it so that I can test it and feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to delegate it.
Okay. Rather than abdicated. Yeah. Okay. What type of sales training are you doing for yourself and your staff right now?
Anthony Hopkins, the Influence of Integrity,
Cialdini. Okay.
You know, occasionally the industry-specific DVDs that come out.
Okay. And doing that fairly consistently?
It's just getting off the ground, so, you know, everything I just mentioned has sort of been introduced over the last 8 months.
Right. Okay. Now, when you start doing specific sales training for employees, what are some of the things that you've got to keep in mind as you implement that?
They have a bad sales mentality.
What do you mean?
Well, they think sales is either A, not part of their job,
mm-hmm.
B is manipulative.
Mm-hmm.
C goes against the integrity of martial arts.
Well, yeah,
it's just really good book that's out on that particular subject you can use right now for your staff training. It's by this really cool, handsome guy.
I left that part out.
You were almost buying into the crap, weren't you? Well, so let's start with what Joe said to begin with. They tend to be a little self-righteous, right? And so, given the fact that that's almost universal, and by the way, also given the fact that if you completely overcome that, you do yourself a disservice. Now keep that in mind. I mean, there's a benefit there, right? Because what you want them to do is you want them to be very concerned about the fact that you're creating the best long-term outcome for the student. You want them to be very concerned that the student is getting the opportunity to benefit from the quality value of martial arts. You want to be very concerned that they're hypersensitive to making sure that the sale gets made in such a way that the person's going to come back the next time and be happy they did it, and then come back the next week and be happy they did it, come back the next month and be happy they did it. And so it's not totally something to be overcome. It's in a great sense something to be relished. And, you know, I don't know, but I doubt that many people go into residential or commercial real estate with the idea of helping as many people as they can. So, you know, we have a great advantage. But you do have to recognize that when you start doing Tom Hopkins with them, is they are going to have an initial knee-jerk reaction that goes the other way, so you got to frame it right. And And the way you frame it is all about, you know, first of all, it's everybody, let's think about this. You know, you've all heard me do the $1 million thing, right? If I take it back, you know.
Right.
You do that with staff, right? If I took it back, you know, 5 years and you made a decision not to have done this, would you be better off or worse off? Now, do you think that it's likely that most people immediately make the decision that's best for them, or they tend to procrastinate making a decision at all? Well, they tend to procrastinate. Well, okay. If they tend to procrastinate, do they ultimately get around to what's best for them, or is it almost random chance whether they do? Well, maybe it's random. Okay. Well, isn't it important that we help them answer all their questions, see everything there is to do, but also help them overcome that natural hesitancy about making a decision and help them move forward? See, I mean, it's got to be that kind of conversation, right? So when you walk through it, and again, you know, Covey's material, you know, win-win or no deal, and Zig Ziglar's material, always, both tend to frame this in the right way. And that's why I like Influence with Integrity rather than like Tony Robbins' NLP, and there's a whole bunch of the others with all of the embedded hypnosis stuff, and there's no moral component to it whatsoever. But the Influence with Integrity book, does give it that component. But what you have to do is in an honest and sincere way, and I'm sure everybody here would be, but you've got to frame it properly for for all of your staff. And, and they've got to have the understanding, and I like the win-win or no deal. You know, let's talk about this. If we're talking to somebody who for all reasons should be a renewal, should follow through to black belt, and if I'm talking to them and they decide not to move forward, is it a win for us? No. I mean, we lost a potentially very, very, productive student. Well, is it a win for them? Well, what do you mean? Well, if they don't want to do it, well, wait a minute. If they did it, would they be better off? Well, yeah. Okay. Well, why would it be that they don't do it? Well, they say X and they say Y and they say, well, aren't those really just kind of excuses for them not to move forward in something that's most productive for them? Well, what do you mean? Well, you know, if they just say they can't afford it right now, aren't they making a value judgment on what this is worth compared to other stuff, right? And if they really get to their black belt in 3 or 4 years, is this going to have been the same value as the kitchen counters? Or is this going to have been life-changing and that's, now old hat? What do you think? You know, is this the same value as going and getting a new motorcycle? Or is it just that's the new toy, but this is really life-changing? I mean, you have to do that constantly with the staff because if you don't do that, then they either rebel against the tools, or what they do is they implement them in such a way that the outcome isn't what you want, right? Because, I mean, I can get the piece of paper signed, but that doesn't mean I've created a great lifetime student who loves me to death and thinks this is wonderful. You know, the goal is not to have a high closing rate. The goal is to have a high black belt graduation rate. And so all the pieces have to be done with the same level of sincerity and the same level of integrity. But still, the techniques are value neutral, right? I mean, if there's a way of handling an objection, the technique is value neutral. It's the person that's implementing it, the way they're thinking about it, and the way they're approaching it, and the sincerity they bring to it that's useful. So, so what that means is you have to preface all of this stuff in the way which is exactly the way you mean it, but to make sure that they don't take it in the wrong way, so they approach it in the right way. And again, when you have a lot of part-timers, you tend to have one or two types of people. You have people who are coming in just to make a little bit of an hourly wage, or you have people who are like athletes who like to kick and punch and like the thing, but they don't really understand the overarching, thing that the school is trying to accomplish, right? And if they aren't tied into active count, gross, percentage of renewals, percentage of closing rate, one thing or another, they really don't get the big picture of what you're trying to accomplish. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, if every conversation you're having with them is about whether they got the gross up today and whether the closing ratios were wrong, then you're missing the most important thing in where you want their mind to be all the time, right? I mean, you really do want them to be thinking in terms of having more students, and having them longer, and having them achieve their black belt at a higher level, and having them be more excited about what they're doing, And the way they're going to have more students and have more black belts is by having a tighter closing ratio and having a tighter upgrade ratio. So you've got to keep, you know, keep the worldview in mind. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, but that's the way you implement a lot of that stuff. But so going back to sales system, what are you missing on sales systems?
Well, actually, I think the culture right now is right.
But okay.
What I need to do is I need to be able to hand them trainings.
Right.
And hand them, you know, a process that they can train in.
Right.
And that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So I've got a lot of work to do.
What do you, if you're, let's take a piece here, the enrollment conference. What are you doing right now to train whoever's doing the enrollment conferences on the enrollment conference?
We have a, you know, a sort of loose process that we follow.
Okay. Okay. So,
which is a couple
so, of so Joe is dad. James is the 9-year-old son. Here's mom. God,
thanks.
You have bad taste. enroll them.
Okay. So this is after the
second lesson.
After the second lesson.
They're both here. You've got your checkbook, right?
Right.
He's got his checkbook.
Man, I really want to do this.
Does anybody have a checkbook anymore?
He doesn't have the checkbook. If I'm mom, I have the checkbook.
Nobody really has a checkbook anymore,
mom,
do they?
It's, do all,
it's always
no.
He has a Visa, MasterCard, and an Amex in his pocket. So go right in.
So Mr. and Mrs. Quinones, I know that James did a great job today in class. I was really excited to see how he did. Sensei Chris, I know worked with him a lot on his discipline, which, as you read in the homework and so forth, is do things when and how they should be done. Now, last week we were talking a little bit about some of the discipline issues that he was showing about not getting ready for school in time in the morning. James, you know, we asked you about that. Do you think you've done any better with that, let's say this morning? Were you, did you get your backpack ready to go for school this morning? No? Mom, what do you think?
Well, he's showing a little bit of improvement, but, you know, he's still giving me a really hard time in the morning.
Okay, got it. So there's been a little bit of improvement this week.
Yeah, I guess a little bit.
Okay, well, let me explain about how, you know, we're going to continue to teach James the lessons.
And, of course, he just asked, you know, a Tom Hopkins classic say no question, right? Because, you know, half the time the answer is going to be, no, this is the worst day ever. I can't believe.
Right.
Because it's the only one she can remember, and they had a yelling match this morning.
Okay.
No, go ahead.
And then I might talk about the process we use for teach discipline over the next couple of years.
Go ahead.
Okay. So there's a few different ways we teach discipline in the school. One is that we have a trademark character development program, which involves worksheets and lessons that we teach in some of the classes.
That's not something that he's going to have to do, right? Because I don't really have a lot of time between his homework and all of his after-school activities and stuff to have to sit down with him and do this stuff.
Well, that's interesting. So, when you came into the school, you were interested in doing having James learn more about discipline, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Does that mean you're really still committed to it?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, then there's certain things you need to do to participate in the school. Now, to be honest, most of it is going to, you know, be taken care of by the instructors, but we're going to need your support at home. And what that's going to look like is that once he gets to his third belt, his orange belt, he'll need to be doing one of these worksheets. Per belt, which is every 2 months. So we put out one every 2 weeks. He's going to do one out of four that's going to come out in each of his test cycles. Each project is usually involved, like writing 10 sentences, like 10 ways he can show better discipline around the house, or a habit project, like show, you know, get his room clean with his backpack right in the morning every day for 7 days. So you'll need to track those things so that we can actually see whether James is making progress or not. Is that something you're willing to do?
I guess if it's only once every 2 weeks or so.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this question. It is only once, it's even less than that, but let me ask the question. Are you interested in having discipline once every 2 weeks or so, or are you interested in having discipline every day?
All the time.
Okay, great. Well, that's what I'd like to have you do. Before I go into the how much and when, of course, do you have any more questions about the how and why of what you see on the floor, how we do things, or why we do things based on the classes you've seen?
Nope.
Okay.
Can I get my uniform today?
Well, I'd certainly like to do that. And then I pull out
my uniform pad.
How much is it?
Stay in control.
Dad's favorite topic.
How much is it? Well, we have a couple of different ways to join the school. Let me talk to you about that. Let me pull out my roll.
for his presentation sheet, but I actually have a schedule first. I would go through the schedule. And you find two times that work for you on the schedule. My pre sheet looks like this.
Okay.
To enter the school, there's a $149 enrollment fee, which registers you into the school and include free with that. It's everything's going to need for karate to get started, is belt, is uniform, t-shirt, etc. And then there's two ways to join the school. There's on trial, and on a trial basis has a very minimal commitment. You can join for $197 a month, and you can stop at any time with a 90-day notice. 90-day notice is enough time for us to say, oh, there's a problem, what's going on? And we have a little chance to talk it through with you guys and see if we can resolve it for you, because we want you to get to his black belt, which is a long process. And that's $197 a month. If you guys have any questions about the registration fee, the enrollment fee, or the trial program? Okay, great. The other way of joining the school is the basic program. And the basic program is $157 a month. The basic program is a 12-week 4-month program. And what you do is you commit to that program, we commit to you on the price. Do you guys have any questions about that?
What's the 149 for?
The 149 is enrollment for the enrollment price into the school that registers you into the school. But I'll tell you what, because we're taking the time to sit down and talk with you today, if you register today and I cut that in half, you're only charging $75 for it.
Yeah, well, and, you know, and see that the first thing that pops into my mind when you do that is now I'm kind of hesitant. Because if you'd have told me in advance that there was a discount...
You're supposed to be role-playing.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, role-play.
Yeah.
Role-play. Now, here's one that I have to tell you right out, not role-play for a second, is one thing I've learned through experience and through Master Oliver is to get rid of every other objective before you even touch that, right? You approached it, but kind of skirted around it. So right now, Mom could say, you know, we really have a hard time making it to class. You know what I mean? And so the price thing is going to go out the window.
Right.
See, I saw him go through the schedule.
He just helped me slap you around. And then he did the same thing that he helped slap you around for. So let's take a break there and let's explore what you were saying. Is what he means by that is, and in your introductory sheet you cover all of the pre-qualification stuff. And so what we may be doing is, because he's got a very elaborate, you know, intro pre-qualification sheet, what we may be doing is short-circuiting that by going straight into the enrollment conference. But to paraphrase what you just said is, you like to know that the tuition is more or less in the price range, you're not moving out of town next week, that there aren't any health problems that you should know about, that all the decision makers are there, because even though you've got a male and a female, doesn't mean that, you know, there's not his ex-wife and, you know,
her ex-husband. I have grandparents that pay for programs at my school.
That's right, that's right.
And the good thing in Master Oliver, the questions he's asking, if you ask those before you give them the money figures,
yeah, they give you an honest answer.
If you say the money numbers and then you ask any of those questions, you get it completely different.
Yeah.
Because those answers then become their excuse.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, let's see if I get a put off objection.
And then one of my just personal feelings about enrollment stuff, why have it? Enrollment fee.
Because we do.
See, we used to, and we changed it to a down payment, and it works so much better.
Just make it a down payment.
Yeah, I don't even.
Questions
I don't.
On it every time and announce a down payment, I don't get any.
I get no questions on it. People ask me what it is. I say it's an enrollment fee that registers you in the school, and that's it. I get that maybe one out of 50 conferences.
Yeah, I would even, you know, it's a minor point, but I would avoid the term fee.
If you said
don't,
if yeah, you said, well, if you down said it was a down payment, you would get the same. There'd be no objection.
Yeah, my question though now is not
down payment then justifies that. Well, why do I have to pay that? Well, just like when you buy a car, you make a down payment, and the balance we work out.
Right. Thank you. My question is now. You said that though that your close ratio is down. Could it be possible that part of the problem with the close ratio is people are scared off by this extra fee they have to pay before they have to sign up?
I doubt it.
Sorry, guys. I thought they're all
yeah. Yeah. I doubt it, but. But, you know, there's subtle shifts you can make in terminology that just help, you know.
Yeah,
and every, every little term that, you know, makes them cringe a little bit, if you can get rid of those things, that, you know, it helps. You know, this is our, did I ever email you this?
No, sir.
You had asked about three times, and it wasn't on my, and frankly, this is one of those examples of the front side is fine, and the back side is, you know, they tweaked it, and I think made it less useful. What I would have is I would have none of this stuff on this sheet.
The top stuff or the bottom stuff?
This piece right here.
Okay.
Okay. What this is it's a conversation about we're going to do an evaluation and see about you training black belt one thing or another. But the very fact of having it on here creates questions about it that aren't necessarily productive. But yeah, I mean, this would be our standard Roman conference sheet. Okay. And we have a PowerPoint now and an intro video and all that stuff. But on this sheet, yes, here would be the conference. Is what the hell were you calling them?
Mr. Crononos.
Crononos. Okay. So Ms. Jones. Billy, how'd you like class today?
I thought it was James. I loved it. It was great.
Billy is my fallback. Okay, so. And so, how's he seem to be enjoying the program so far?
Seems like he likes it.
Good. Did you guys have a chance to go through and memorize the student creed and review the information we sent home with you last time when you were in class?
Some of it. We've been really busy.
Went through a little bit of it, okay. So, did you have a chance to go through it, Mr. Jones?
No, I haven't.
Okay, see, now I already have a red flag, right? Because, you know, they haven't taken the time and effort to go through all that material, so I may be jumping in, you know, ahead of myself. Okay.
What would you have said to the mom if her response was, well, I don't know. It wasn't a, I mean, would you get that? I mean, how would you role play that? What would you say?
Meaning how you were liking the program?
Yeah, how was your first class and her response was anything other than favorable?
So how's he liking the first class?
I'm not really sure. He's...
Sounds like you've had some wishy-washiness on other activities.
Yeah, he's done baseball and soccer, and he stuck with both of them for about 2 months and was done with them.
Fantastic. When did you want that lack of commitment to change?
Now would be good.
Okay, so that's one of the things we're working on fixing with James. Billy, Bob, Billy. Sue, whatever.
And his twin brother.
Yeah.
James.
Yeah. Well, you raise a good point. Anytime you get kind of a wishy-washy answer, it's a good time to kind of like put down the pen and, you know, and question it, right? And the reason I went that direction is it seems like most of the time it's the, I'm so pissed at my little kid because he dropped out of soccer in two months, even though he told us he loved it to death. And he bugged us for 3 months to go do baseball, and then he went to three practices and we couldn't get him to go back, right? Which is a marvelous opportunity to explain how this is completely different than all those things. But you got to take that opportunity, right?
And my standard line for that is we have lots of students like that. A lot of them are black belts and beyond.
Yeah, we have a lot of students who started out that way.
Right.
Not that we have a lot of students like that.
who were like that.
Yeah. So anyway, let's assume everything's fine so far. So, you know, I'm going to go through and I'm going to say, Ms. Jones, and by the way, I don't like to have them sitting across from each other. You know, I'd rather have them sitting over here so they can't be like, you know, going back and forth. But we do a little evaluation on all the kids when they go into the class, and a lot of times this will already be filled out, and it's, you know, program director says, and the, you know, Mr. Smith, you know, completed that. I wanted to go over with you. You know, there's really two pieces of it. We look at effort, enthusiasm, attitude in order for us to qualify and make sure we have somebody who really should be enrolled in the program. We look a little bit at physical traits just so we know what we need to work on immediately and where we need to focus on the physical sides. But Billy's attitude in class was above average. It was really good. Respect to managers, I say, is fair to good. He's still working on the yes-sirs and the no-sirs and the bows and all that stuff. We're still having to remind him. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I wish I could get him to do that at home.
Yeah, we will. We will. You know, effort and enthusiasm in class was really good. Concentration, again, fairly good. He's putting a lot of effort into, but I can tell he's not really used to staying focused for very long and really concentrating on things. We're going to be working a lot on that. Is that right, Mrs. Jones?
Yeah.
Okay. And overall, his progress rate was good, so no problems there. Overall fitness rate, as with most of the kids, is, you know, it's okay. You know, with most of the boys, they're not real flexible, and that was certainly the case. We're going to have to work on that. His speed is a reflection of enthusiasm. So, I mean, he was really putting a lot of effort into things, so he was doing pretty well. Overall, his power, again, pretty enthusiastic, making an effort there. Overall balance and coordination, I'd say we have a lot of work to do there. He's having trouble with standing one leg and, you know, and really doing that. Does that match more or less what you guys observed?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Okay. And sounds like we have a little bit of respect issues at home we need to work on, obviously developing the concentration for focus at school and so forth, and some physical things down here that we'll work on developing right away. Does that make sense? Okay. Let me ask you a couple of other questions before we move on. Now, are you guys pretty permanent in the area? Any likelihood of moving or transferring in the next year or two?
No.
No? Okay. Well, the reason I ask is...
If I keep my job.
Yeah.
If you keep your job, okay. Okay. What do you do?
Work for Sun Microsystems. I'm about to get laid off. I'm sorry, I heard
Sun Microsystems. Well, you're clearly in an industry that has lots of opportunity. If you did get laid off, what's your fallback position? Don't know. Okay.
Don't know.
Okay. So, it's good to know that. And as we've talked already in the program. You know, James physically is 9, mentally is about 3, and we're going to be focusing.
Oh man, I can see the parents getting up and walking out now.
He's a great student.
Yeah, great student
now
for
I
his.
Really want to enroll.
Great student for his mental development, but it typically.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
What if you have that student that? On this checklist, it should be this.
Well, you tell them. I mean, you do it nicely. The truth is, I like to have some contrast. So I'd like them to have something that they did poor and something they did fair or good, right?
You know, like the stereotypical ADD or ADHD child,
Total blob.
But yeah. I will say, a lot of those ADD and ADHD kids, they will put effort and enthusiasm into it. So at least that's something that you can usually mark off. They're usually pretty into it, even if they're all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I wouldn't mind doing something like this. You know, and I could say, well, you know, Ms. Jones, obviously Joey has some issues with concentration, focus, respect, and mannerisms. Now his attitude was okay. He was making an effort. His effort and enthusiasm was good. He seems to like this. Clearly we're going to go to work on improving his overall level of respect and his overall level of concentration right away. I'm sure that's one of the reasons you have him here. See, I mean, I'd be honest with him, you know, now. Don't be brutal. You know?
Right.
And by the way, one of my funniest stories, which is not the way I would recommend doing it, is, you know, have this mom, the kid is a blob. I mean, you know, the worst case scenario of like the 7-year-old who's, you know, 150 pounds, couch potato, does nothing, you know, can't seem to say yes sir, no sir, nothing. It's all yeah, and it's all, you know, halfway sitting down in his chair. And I go in the enrollment conference, and the mom says, "This is what I need to fix."
Oh,
right? But through the conference, I'm saying, well, you know, it takes, you know, 3 to 4 years to be a black belt. We start with about, you know, a third of the program. It's going to be a year thing. And she looks at the kid and says, what do you think about you sticking with it for a year? I don't know. Well, do you want to come back for another class? I don't know. You know, you said you wanted to do this before we got here. Yeah, okay. And she turns to me and says, "Well, I don't want to make him do anything he doesn't want to do."
There's
and
if, a whole problem right there.
Well, yeah, I made the mistake of saying that. She gives me the idea, you know, I don't want to make him do anything he doesn't want to do. And I said, "Well, you just told me you want to fix discipline and focus and concentration, and you want to fix this, you know, the whole thing is going on. She goes, yeah, but I'm not going to make him do anything he doesn't want to do. And I said, well, it's obvious what the problem is. What I got is her slamming the door on the way out, yelling at the top of her lungs, asshole! I didn't get that one. I didn't get that one. No, but that's the one out of 100 that I remember. It's not the every other one.
Yeah.
But so you're pretty permanent in the area, no likelihood of moving or transferring? Okay, fantastic. And the reason we ask that is James is six now. It's going to take him 3 to 4 years to be a black belt. James, you could be a black belt by the time you're 10. Would that be cool?
Oh, yeah.
And then you could be maybe a second degree black belt by the time he's 12 or 13. So you could even, you know, kind of work your way through middle school and high school teaching martial arts if you wanted to. Okay? Fantastic. Now, does James have any health issues we need to worry about?
Well, he does have a case of mild Tourette's.
Mild
Tourette's? Screw you.
Have you ever had that, by the way?
I actually have one of my adult black belts, and occasionally in class she does stuff.
I had a 10-year-old with Tourette's, which was, you know, really interesting experience as a student. And of course, there's a lot of issues other than the inability for them to control what comes out of their mouth. But
your answer is always great. This is going to help him tremendously.
Yeah, this is going to be a great asset. And you know, I get the two most common answers: is he has asthma, or he has ADD or ADHD. Yeah. And that
we
gives
see a
you,
lot of autism.
Yeah, that's the next thing that they don't really have that are diagnosed.
ADD,
right?
No problem. I'm just going to shove it in the cell and he'll be as good as they.
ADD, yeah. Every kid in the country has ADD, and now they have autism. So,
or hyper.
Yeah.
ADHD. Yeah.
But you know, if they say ADD, you know, and I always like the example of, you know, like in autism, you know, we've got a lot of autistic kids, so I can give them the answer about the other autistic kids we've had and how they've experienced and what they were afraid of. But you know, ADD and ADHD and asthma, you know, there's lots of clinical research about, you know, what this does,
well,
so it gives you an opportunity.
The NIH, yeah. When we were in Maryland, mm-hmm. in Longfield, there, yeah. with the American Lung Association.
Yeah, tell them about that.
And we did a 3-month. They all did, mm-hmm. basically. We brought in a group of kids, mm-hmm. through the asthmatic kids, mm-hmm. and they did up to just one belt level. Just to check their cardiovascular conditioning, how it would help them if they had, you know, the asthmatic, mm-hmm. conditions, and they had some from mild to,
right.
severe, so they had to bring their little inhalers, mm-hmm. and stuff. And at the end of the test, they literally recommended it for every asthmatic, mm-hmm. kid now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was years ago.
So
you know, nowadays it's even more.
Yeah. So you know, when you get anything like that, it gives you an opportunity to do a little stump speech.
Toby has. Did you see the thing that Toby put together?
Which one?
The one that has all the letters. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, he gave that to all of us.
What? Okay. But anyway, so moving right along. Now, Ms. Jones, have you thought about taking class with James?
Well, it's not for me.
Why?
I'd rather go to the women's gym and work out there.
Sure.
No one can see me.
Sure. Okay. Who's going to be bringing you to class?
Probably me.
Okay. So you're going to be here twice a week for about an hour each time? It'd be a marvelous opportunity for the two of you to do it together rather than, you know, sitting on the bench and just watching.
We'll see.
Okay. Well, why don't you maybe take the next couple classes with him and you can see if you like it. Okay. He's being very difficult.
Yeah.
Very difficult. Okay.
Moms can be that way.
Yeah.
When they do that, if you want to get them acclimated just to get their feet wet, you say, well, you know what a lot of the parents do that don't want to do, mm-hmm. karate? What they do is they just do a couple lessons so, mm-hmm. they know how to help the children practice.
Exactly.
At home.
Yeah.
So if you could just help him by, mm-hmm. doing a couple classes, you'll find that you'll learn a few techniques and a couple ways to help him in the class. And parents understand when they hear the directions of how to do it, they're going to pick it up very quickly. Here, physically, it takes them a little while. The kids, on the other hand, physically, they pick it up quickly, but here they don't really remember what to do or how to do it. So they have to do repetition before they actually retain that knowledge.
I like that.
Whereas our adults, we find that a lot of our parents, just by watching the class,
after doing it for a couple classes themselves, are able to help the kids tremendously at home and improve their grades on their tests tremendously. So then they go, oh, well, I could do that, I guess, for a couple classes. And then they get in there and it's fun. They right. see other parents in there. Then they end up, we usually convert them to a 30-day free.
Right.
So we don't charge them at the end of 30 days. Then they get it. And then the way Master Oliver does it anyway, anybody after two is free anyway.
Right, right. Well, we do the same thing. We've taken on that that framework.
Those are, I mean, and I find 90% of the parents say no. They never thought about it. But that's why in the first orientation class, when I'm doing it, I'll have them come up then and hold the target. I'll have them come up then and hold the pad.
Kind of break down that barrier.
Uh-huh. And then the kids here, and I'll say, show them, watch your mom here, or watch your dad, whoever's there. And then don't even talk about them getting into it, but just have them do it a couple times.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And now they're pre-framed. And then the other way, you kind of backdoor them into it.
And the main thing is you break that barrier of them actually getting on the floor, and then it's easy.
So where were we?
We have a good example, and y'all can probably, you probably have it yeah. in your class too. I say, Miss Allie, you know, the girl that was actually here, mm-hmm. Sean, her mother started when she was a black belt.
Yeah, I have a few of
those. And now her mother's a black belt. Mm-hmm. And I said, we always kid, now there's two ways to do it. You know, one, you can start right when they start, and then you'll get your black belts together, or you can do it like Miss Allie did. She waited, Miss Morrow waited till Allie got her black belt, and then Allie was teaching, and then she had to call Allie, yes ma'am, no ma'am.
Yeah. I have a four-person family at that in my school. The youngest son got his black belt first, and the mother joined. Now she's a black belt. Then the husband joined. He's a green belt now. And now the daughter just joined.
Well, Robert,
and they all joined separately.
Robert here, same thing.
And
is his,
him,
you know,
him,
two daughters, wife, him, and son.
We find that it's a lot easier but on back your on, scheduling if you do it.
Back on track now that I have relayed the message and relieved my bladder. Okay, so... Ms. Jones, did you get a chance to take a look at the class schedule and figure out what 2 days a week were going to work for you?
Mm-hmm.
What days were going to work?
Tuesday, Thursday.
Tuesday, Thursday? Fantastic. And twice a week regularly will be fine for the schedule? Okay, good. Good. And did we get a chance to go over the tuition last time?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay. It's going to range from $180 to about $225 a month. Is that going to work okay for the budget?
There goes your new car.
Great. I really wanted that car. What's his name again? Billy?
Or is that Billy Bob Sue.
Billy James.
Yeah.
I hope you're happy, Billy. You're going to cost Mommy her new car.
I just had that one. That's all right.
Listen, I've heard that before. You'd be surprised.
Was that a yes?
Yes.
Yes.
So that'll work comfortably. You can still feed him, and you still have transportation. Okay, good.
I have to drive up the old beat up station wagon from the '80s, but I'll be all right.
Okay, well, you know, that's better. You know, cars depreciate.
We're not gonna get much for that price.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's right.
I love that.
Yeah. Now, does Billy have plenty of room at home to practice?
One second. Can you tell everybody that line just to make sure they all know that one? Cars depreciate.
Yeah, cars appreciate this. Will be a life of value. Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Write that down.
Yeah, you should write that one down.
Cars
appreciate. I don't know how many times I've used that one. And so, you know.
So and
did I steal it from you?
Some reference.
Okay.
It registers with them.
Yeah. Yeah, 3 years later, it has no value whatsoever, more or less. Anyway, does Billy have to play James, Susie, whatever? Does he have plenty of remote home practice? Okay.
What's
and
the point of that question?
To diffuse the pressure on the price.
Okay.
To change
on.
Subject, and we're now talking about martial arts again, right? And you know that's an interesting question, by the way. And I'm back to role playing. Is James? What do you think? Do you think practice makes perfect?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of a trick question because, you know, perfect practice makes perfect. If you practice wrong, you actually get worse. So one of the things that we really don't want the kids to have to do much of is practice much the first 2 or 3 months at home you know, we'll be working on memorization and working on some stretching and stuff like that. But really, we'll want to make sure that anytime you practice, you're doing it exactly right so you don't develop bad habits. Does that make sense? Okay. And what am I trying to diffuse there? Mom who goes home and does piano practice and slaps the kid around. Yeah. Okay.
He doesn't practice much at home. I don't think he's into this.
Yeah. Now, how did you guys find out about the school?
Master Oliver came to my school and did this after school program.
Oh, that's right. That's right, the school program. And now I'm glad that you came in. Of course, we have a bunch of kids from Leawood Elementary School coming down. Now, most of our students actually come from referrals of existing students. And so, you know, one of the things you might be thinking about is who James knows that he would get better benefit from the program if they came to class, who your best friend is at school, or who a buddy in the neighborhood is. And, of course, that's where most of our students come from anyway. And the thing we like about that is we basically self-select quality students, because if you think about somebody you'd want to have come down with him who will improve the quality of the school and improve James's experience because it's somebody he'd like to train with. So can you think of a couple of people you might like to have to come join?
John, my best friend.
Okay.
And Charles, my other.
Great. Well, you'd certainly be welcome to have the two of them come down and take class with you next time.
Could I bring Eric too?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right.
And if you have 58 other friends in the neighborhood, bring them too. Okay.
Can I bring a soccer team?
Yeah. Now, James, what do you think about following through and being a black belt? Do you want to be a black belt when you're 12, 13?
Cool.
Okay. Fantastic. Ms. Jones, what do you think about that? Do you think he's going to be pretty serious and follow through with us?
That would be great to have a black belt.
Okay. Now, a lot of times I get the "I don't know." Gives me the opportunity to address it now, right? I don't know. He's never stuck with anything in his life. Well, what do you mean? Well, he started soccer lessons, and he dropped out of that, and he wanted to play the tuba, and I tried to get him to practice every day at home, and, you know, he got kind of burnt out with that. And so it gives me an opportunity to say, well, you know, that's a perfect reason for him to be here. And I do want you to think in terms of that the purpose of the school is to teach discipline and focus and concentration, but it is an ongoing curriculum where he's going to be excited about getting his black belt and excited about follow through. And it's a much different thing than other recreational activities. And certainly than, you know, I mean, the typical music lesson is, you know, you have to watch over him, have him practice, you know, 3 hours a day at home. This isn't like that. You know, you don't have to do that, especially in the first few months until he gets this down. So it's something that we find a much better follow-through, but also it teaches them the discipline, focus, and concentration that you're going to need. I mean, it gives me an opportunity to make this a solution rather than this another one of the things that they're going to, you know, have a problem with.
Right.
Right. And again, see, this is all what Joe was saying on your conference is if you get all this stuff out of the way to begin with, right, is now I don't have the excuse of I don't want to do a year contract because we may move, unless you told me and I can deal with that. And I don't have the excuse of I don't want to do a year contract because he's not going to stick with it. And I don't have the excuse of, and you were asking me actually three questions, commitment, down payment, monthly payment, and I have to make a decision all three all at the same time, right?
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that this had all been handled in the intro, in the first conference.
Right. So, and maybe so. I mean, the sheet that you've been using covers all that stuff. But you do want to make sure that if it has been covered in the first conference, I would reiterate it. Right? Now, I know last time we talked about blank, and we also talked about blank, and we also talked about this, and we also talked about this, so the question, you know, the answers can't change, right? Now, Ms. Jones, anybody else need to be involved with the decision about transportation or finances or just to support James in the program?
Yeah. Well, you know, if we got your mother to pay for the lessons, I could still get my car.
Well, there you go. There you go. Do you think that's a realistic possibility?
Sweetheart?
No. A little too chummy over here.
Yeah. All righty then. Okay.
He's playing that role really good.
Hey, yeah.
We do this a lot at the school.
Yeah.
I think he has the wig on.
No, easy. I got two boys, and I do not go that route. Thank you.
Okay, I'm not touching that one with a 10-foot pole. Okay, so let me show you a little bit about how the program is structured. And usually I've lost the kid by now, right? So I'll get the kid back involved, right? Okay, James, take a look at this, because this has to do with your lessons. Now, James, you're 7 now.
James is bipolar.
Whatever.
You're going to give me a 6. I'm 3. I'm
You're 9.
Billy, I'm Jack.
Okay, Sue, take a look here. You're seven now. That means you can be a black belt when you're 10 or 11. And once you get your black belt, obviously you train to second and third degree, continue on from there. So really you could be a second degree black belt by the time you're about 13. Would that be cool?
I want to be a ninth degree black belt.
Yeah, well, you'll be about 62 by then. But but obviously, Ms. Jones, our initial goal is to get each of the kids to black belt and beyond. This is really kind of the starting point of where they're learning. Initially, on the enrollment, we're going to start with just about a third of the way to black belt. And we do that just so we can evaluate, make sure we all feel comfortable with him following through. We want to let the instructors decide that we really feel comfortable with him being a long-term member of the family and really following through to black belt. Now, we do 400 initially to get started. Now, since you were with the Leewood program, we give you a $200 discount for all the kids coming from Leewood. So it's $200 initially, and then $197 a month. So we would do $397 now, $197 a month after that. How would you like to do the $397?
I have a piggy bank at home.
Credit card.
Credit card? Okay. Visa, MasterCard, Discover.
Okay.
So let me go ahead and run that for you. In the meantime, who's got the better handwriting? I bet you do. Okay. If you can fill this out for me, just fill this part out, and I'll get you a receipt for that.
Very cool.
Start writing. Okay, good. Done deal. Right. Now, when I actually get to the prices, I don't want a compound decision, right? What's your thought of the $197 you can cancel with 90 days and $157 and it's a 12-month contract?
Well, here's the thing. Connecticut limits the length of my contract to 2 years.
Right.
If I offer a 2-year, I have to offer a 1. And my thought of offering...
By law, you have to offer a 1?
I have to offer a 1.
Really?
Interesting.
So, I started contracts back in 2008, maybe 2007.
Right.
I don't find a bit of difference in my retention rates or my closing rates. Maybe my closing rates a little bit. My closing rates have done so much in the last year, I can't tell. So I find offering the trial period reduces the commitment objection to nothing because they don't have to commit. They all choose the 157 anyway.
Right.
So it's one way of overcoming the commitment objection because it's at a lower price, and so they get to choose to not commit.
Okay.
They get to choose to commit. So it's worked out well for me.
Okay.
I like the split decision. I have almost nobody do the trial program.
Okay. What do you guys think?
I was in a school in California, in Burbank, that did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was $298 a month. A friend of mine was looking for a school out there, so I went with him to check some schools out. And it was $298 a month if you went month to month with a 60-day notice of cancellation.
Right.
And it was $175 or something if you signed an agreement. Mm-hmm. So they did the same thing.
And tell me how yours is again. There's two ways to join the school. There's a trial-based screen.
It's almost half.
Time for with a 90-day notice.
Yeah. Well,
it's $150 a month. You're on the basic program, which is a 12 or 24-month program, and it's $157 a month, which you feel more comfortable with.
So if I sign the 157, I don't have an option to cancel?
If you sign the 157, you're committed to 1 year, and we'll commit to you on the price for 1 year.
How about the 2-year?
You may also choose to lock in the price for 2 years if you prefer that.
And it's still 157 if I do 2 years?
That's right.
And at the end of that first year, if I don't sign the second year now, how much would that be?
At the end, if you don't sign...
At the end of the first year, if we decide we want to continue for another year, how much would it be?
Well, you'd be subject to any price increases. My prices usually go about 10 to 15% each August.
Okay.
Yeah, I would change the word price to tuition.
Tuition.
Yeah. It depends on what the tuition would be at the time.
Do you want them to sign a 1 year or do you want them to sign a 2 year? When do you upgrade? Do you upgrade them if they're on a 1 year? Do you upgrade them to some other program sometime?
I should, but I haven't started that yet.
What is your average gross?
What is my average gross? Mid-40s.
Gosh, you could do 60 or 70.
Yeah.
Man.
We've had that conversation.
Wow.
Yeah. He could do 80,000 a month with. With 13 fewer people.
You make a third.
Yeah.
But
you're never going to live that down.
30 to 40% of your gross.
Not until I get him to fix it.
and 60 to 70%
of that kind of money. Oh, Jeff, we haven't even gone to his biggest opportunity. he has his life massively overcomplicated. But that's a different story.
He's doing good. I mean,
yeah.
Don't argue with it. It's just
he's done a good growth. Okay, but
know,
let's.
The good thing is that you have a lot of room to grow.
Yeah, no, I got it.
Here's
a lot of schools that are doing everything and not making what you're making. So.
Yeah. Well, that's absolutely true. Here's a couple of things. I don't have particularly a negative reaction to the, you know, choice A or choice B. Although I don't think I would explain it all that much, right? I mean, when you explained it, you said the reason for the 90-day is it gives us a chance to fix and that this is a chance to do this and gives us a chance to do this. And it's almost like it's pre-framing that there's going to be a problem, right? And so, you know, I don't think I would have that explanation. The other thing is you've got to think about how you present the program in order for you to do whatever's going to come next. Right, so if I'm going to turn around in 90 days and say, well, you know, you're only enrolled for 12 months, we need to you know, take a look and qualify you to train to black belt or beyond or leadership or whatever the next deal is, you've got to put that in their mind now, okay? Because you don't want to come back to them and say, I know I told you you're locked in for 2 years, but really there's this other thing, okay? Because it pre-frames them the wrong way. Does that make sense? So. You know, you notice in the way that I was framing, I was talking about getting your black belt and going beyond black belt, and we start with a trial, and the 12-month contract with no cancellation is a trial.
No, what was interesting was I was listening to how you pre-framed leadership, and I didn't hear it.
No, because what I was talking about is getting your black belt and beyond.
Black belt is what you're pre-framing it to.
Yeah.
Black belt and beyond. Mm-hmm. They don't know, if you say leadership, they don't know what that is yet.
Well, and if I get into too much explanation, then they start...
Well, what's this leadership thing about?
Yeah, then they want more explanation. Right. And then I give them enough explanation to get them confused, and nobody who's ever confused signs anything, and then it goes, you know, goes haywire, right? Okay.
I'll give him another one, because I have my new staff members, what I do for them, I give them a crutch. You know, if somebody has a bad ankle or, you know, is new to the program... selling, I have a little crutch for them. And their crutch is, if they need it, they use the crutch. If they don't need it, they don't use it. So you go for the 1 year or the 2 year, and if they balk and say, well, I don't know if he's going to stick with it. Does he have it to stick with things? Well, no, not really. Well, that's why he needs to do karate, because this is going to teach him how to stick with things. Our program is structured to teach them goals. And once they learn how to set goals and reach goals, blah, 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 right? Now, they still, well, I'm still not real comfortable. Well, let me just ask you this. Would you know in 30 days if he was really going to like this or not? I guarantee you 100% of the time, they'll say, oh, yeah, in 30 days I would know.
Yeah.
Okay, then what I'm going to do, I'm going to give you the option. You can sign up for the year now, but I'm going to give you a 30-day option to cancel. Mm-hmm. At the end of those 30 days, if it's not everything you thought it was, if you don't think he's as motivated as he ever was, then what I'll do is all you'll be out is your first month's tuition, and there will be no more obligation.
Yeah.
Now, every time I've done that, 100% nobody cancels.
Mm-hmm.
But when I give the managers their option to do that, it just gives them, but before they can use it, they have to go through the, you know, recommit and why we're going to stick, and it's going to teach them how to stick with it. But it's that extra little thing that gives them, and they ask it again before they tell them what they're going to do. They ask them the questions, kind of like timing on it. You'll know in 30 days, though. Because they say, yeah, after a couple classes, I won't know. But in a month, yes, definitely I would know. You feel comfortable. Okay. Then what they think you're going to say is, well, why don't you just try it for 30 days, and if you like it, you can sign up. But what I do is in reverse.
Mm-hmm.
You sign up.
The option to cancel. Yeah.
Because people do not cancel.
Right. We use that as a crutch too.
If you try to do it the other way, we'll do it for 1 month, and then at the end of the 1 month, try to get them
recommitted
again.
Good luck.
It won't happen.
Yeah.
I understand that.
In that way, you don't have to worry about the 90-day deal.
Yeah.
With the 90-day deal, it's actually been a pretty good deal. I get a few people who do it who have like real commitment issues, and they just pay me 90-day. It doesn't affect my enrollment. As I said, my retention rate hasn't changed. It's 3-point-something and change, whether they've been on contract or not.
Well, here's what the issue is you're not really consistently upgrading people, and so the process that you're using for the enrollment isn't prefacing and preframing and prepping them for the next thing, right? So, and that's the real important distinction, right? So, I'm in, you know, basically on one side, I'm enrolling forever, and I have to tell you within 90 days that I want to go away, and the other, I'm enrolling for a year or two. And you're right, in practical matters, that, you know, if I'm enrolled for a year and I want to cancel, I still cancel. What are you going to do, right? But you've got to get me to think about what comes next, right? And if you get me to think about what comes next before I do, you know, the first step, then you can't come back to me and say, well, I'm already enrolled for 2 years. Why are you talking to me about this now, right? I'm already enrolled for a year. Why are you talking to me about this now, right? So most of the way we've unfolded with this is all about making sure the next step is handled smooth. More so than just getting them closed.
I see the bigger problem being if you're on that 90-day cancel without a contract, and you try to upgrade me to a 2 or 3 year leadership agreement. Now you want me to go from not having have made a commitment to having to make a commitment.
Well, let me counterpoint that one for a second. And I don't like doing it the way he's doing, but I'm not sure it's wrong. Is I've seen people do it. You know that it's exactly the way you're doing it, but then the renewal is a locked-in contract. And done fine, right? Where it's, you know, a month to month, or it's a you know, right to cancel in 90 days, but then the next deal is about the commitment. And as long as you have a big enough stack of whys on the upgrade, then that still works. So that doesn't necessarily, in fact, I would say the longer they're committed to initially, the harder it is to do the upgrade, right? So the guy who says, yeah, I'll do the 157 for 2 years, well, that's a harder one if I didn't prep them to think right about it.
Do you, on those 90 days, can they quit any time during the 90 days, or do they have to go for at least 90 days?
90-day notice.
90-day notice. Oh, so okay. They can quit, you know, 19 months from now, the 90-day notice.
Oh, okay, 90-day notice.
Yeah,
notice.
So that gives me 90 days to turn
now,
it around.
Now, can I ask you this?
Are you, yeah, but you don't need to tell them that.
Can I ask
you? You don't need to tell them that. Okay. Yeah.
Can I ask you this?
Yeah.
Are you a black belt school?
Yes.
Well, I mean,
sure.
Is your goal to get them in black belt?
Yes.
You know, when kids go to school, they're not looking to go to school. You know, if you're going to go to college, you're not going to go for a year or 6 months. You want to graduate. You want to get your degree, right? And some people get a junior college degree. Some get a bachelor's degree. But at least there's a goal in mind. And that's the way the karate program is structured. Everybody here in our school is working towards the black belt. And the real benefit of getting your black belt is nothing different than having your degree. You know, if you go to college for a couple of years and take a few classes and get a few credits, but you never get a degree, it doesn't do much good in the business world when you tell somebody, you know, they ask you, do you have a college degree? And you say, no, but I went to college for a few years. All you're reiterating to them is that you can't stick with anything. That's why with karate, we teach the kids how to stick with it. So the black belt, if they reach the black belt, that's something they can use and benefit from the rest of their life. So that's why all of our kids in the school, every single one of them out there is working towards the black belt. Now, we're starting you off on your first semester of training, just like when you go to college, you want to graduate, but you take the first semester, and our first semester here is a year. And then sometime during that year, when we see that they're excited and we can see how they're progressing, if this is something they're really serious about and they really like, then we have a special black belt training that we put them into that's an accelerated training that teaches them techniques that they're going to learn if they're going to become a black belt. So we'll talk about that later. Right now, let's just do the first semester because, you know, even if they just do 1 year, at least that's long enough that they'll have some benefit from the program. Not as much as a black belt, but they'll have some benefit from it. So let's go for that now. But remember, during that program, when I see that they're progressing, and we're going to have all kinds of belt tests and progress evaluations, and we'll go back and revisit that black belt program and let you know how he's doing.
Yeah.
Now, I've pre-framed him for the black belt, but I've kind of made them realize that. And when I point, I actually visualize, and I tell them, I see, because they can see through the window, I say, you see all those kids out there? All of them are working towards the black belt, because we're a black belt school. Now, does that mean that that could have been a white belt class, and they're not all on the black belt program, but they're all working towards the black belt? So I'm kind of reiterating that, even though I've seen them on a year, because they know now they are waiting for me, when do I get qualified for the black belt?
But if you say, okay, you sign a 1 year or 2 year, there's no block in there. So if you start bumping them to the black belt, it's an easy bump because they're on the 1 year, and then you bump them to the black belt, or in Master Oliver's, it's the master or leadership. Right. And that's the black belt program. See, his master club or leadership is a black belt program. So that's how you bump them to that. But remember, that bump is a big bump. And you've got to really pre-frame them well. You have to have a real robust leadership master club program to really get them in there to pay more and to make the longer commitment. But the bump is, if a new student is worth $2,000, your upgraded student is worth anywhere from $8,000 to $20,000. So how valuable. Every one of those you have in there, you've got a gold mine in there. You know, I'd love to go in there and run that school for a year because we would do over $100,000 a month. Now, not forever. Until we got all those people converted to the... Then it'll be back into the normal wave of things, which would be a good solid $50,000 to $70,000 a month school. But I guarantee you, you go in there, the first year or two, you'll have $100,000 a month, you have $150,000 a month. It'll blow your eyes away because you cannot imagine until you've seen it when people actually sit there. And we've had them where Robert Lewis here. And close that door, Tom. Thank you. No offense, but Robert is not the most articulate. He isn't a great salesman, but he came to one of our black belt retreats that we had here, and the night before, he had his deposit from the night before when we were talking about upgrades and renewal because doing the business training. He said, and somebody said, "Well, who's going to write you a check for that much money?" And he pulled it out of his deposit. I had one last night, $14,000. Well, how many students do you have to renew each month at that? To make $100,000 a month. Mm-hmm. If you're making that off of those little parts, just think if every once in a while, 1 out of 10, 1 out of 20, wrote you a check for $10,000, for $20,000, well, how much does that make your tuition go up if you have just a bump, not even 14, 10?
Well, I can give you a better number here. If you have 378 students, right?
278.
278, yeah. And how many of those are not on enrolled in first, second degree black belt?
I'm sorry, say the question.
How many of them are on like a year contract?
Almost all of them.
Okay, so let's take a number: 398 or 200. I'm sorry, 278. I keep transposing. That's
I can
just stand there.
278 times so 10 grand. If you just wanted to make it,
I'm not allowed to do that. Actually, there's some legal issues with that.
3 years.
I'm not allowed to do 3 years. If I offer two, I have to offer one. If I cash out, I can only cash out 50% of the program.
Hold on, I've dealt with this. So if you cash out, you can only cash out half the program. So you can only cash out half of 2 years. Is that right?
I believe that's right.
Okay. Well, that's ultimately not the issue. Do you have a limitation on how much you can charge per month? Okay. Well, see, that's that gives you a lot of leeway. So,
buy 2 years, and you've got 1 year free.
Right.
Pay it in full, get half off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can do well, and it doesn't have to be cash deals. I mean, you want to stay within the
regulation.
And that's
why
regulation.
I said 1 out of 10 cash deal.
You've got 278 people who are only on like month to month or year at a time or something like that. And so, okay, so they're a year at a time. And so, if you now really institute leadership and it's $350 a month, okay. So let's take 278, and let's say you have mediocre efficacy, so you get 150 of them, and the 150 you have no cash deals whatsoever, so you have a $200 a month bump in their payment, and you have a $1,500 down payment, okay. So you have 150 times 1,500 is 150. That's 225,000. Okay, that's down payments. That's not cash deals. 200 a month bump, 150 people. That's $30,000 a month bump.
Yeah.
with no more students.
That's why I'm saying that.
Yeah, that's the $80,000 school with no difference. And that's very realistic. I mean, that's only half of them. And it's staying within the within the letter of the law, and it's staying within the within the intent of the law too, right? So it's not even wiggling around it.
I tell you, it's like the Pied Piper. Once you get a few of them in that leadership program, they all follow.
That's what we're seeing now.
At the beginning,
you
go and you offer it to them at a special price.
Yeah, 6 weeks. It
might be
blitz,
somewhere in. And that's then everybody that wants that gets a special price on it that won't be offered later because we're starting a new program. Yeah. We want to give you an opportunity to do it.
Grandfather you in at
the
old
rate
yeah.
because
yeah.
you've been a loyal student, but after this date, they won't be available. Well, you then go in and you'll have a 100 of them that will do
And by the way, if you have the two-year limitation.
Every time.
And again, I'd have to look at how it's written, but if you have the two-year limitation, that's fine. You enroll them to second degree black belt, and they have the option to cancel at the 2 year anniversary, or you give them an automatic renewability clause.
That's what we've done.
So it goes the other way. It guarantees them the same rate through second degree black belt, but it renews at the anniversary of 2 years each time. And at their option, they can cancel. I mean, so
and I can send you a copy of our agreement because that's what we do. All of our agreements are auto renew.
If the term is more than 1 month, auto renew is not allowed in Connecticut. If your term is month to month, auto renew is allowed. More than month agreement, you can't have.
Wow. Well,
see, New York, it's not allowed if you don't put it in the agreement. But once it's in the agreement, they can sign it and you're good.
Well,
see,
but
the point is, if I get people in the leadership, and my retention is good, leadership. I mean,
and
even 2 years at the $350 Master Cook price is $8,500.
Yeah,
that's a lot more student value than a 1 year.
I think the bottom line for my school is my student value, even though it's coming up, I came up about $30 last year, and is on track to continue going up. My enrollment's down 20%, but my gross is about the same as it was last year.
Yeah. Well, but your
real big involved.
Your gross should be 60,000 or more with that same active camp.
That's
so
that's the point.
Yeah.
There's a lot more room.
Yeah. You can phrase it whatever way you want, but what you can do is you can lock them into a certain price, which you're doing anyway with your other deal. Lock them into a certain amount they're going to have to pay. And then at their option or at your option, it gets renewed. And if it's not automatic, that it doesn't really matter, because then in 2 years of their still training, you're going to say you want to renew. Yes, please initial this. Okay, you're off and running. And frankly, if they're not there, that's just becomes a termination point where you don't get any payments.
You still got $8,500.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you got a big down payment that's legal and it's fine and it's not a big prepaid and frankly, I'd much rather have a big down payment than a paid in full. If you have enough of them, because you don't have the peaks and valleys all the time.
So it's $8,500, and they put $4,000 down, and you have 20 of them a month.
Yeah.
At $4,000 down, $10,000 a month, whatever.
Yeah, I mean,
not everybody will do $4,000. Some will do $1,000. So, and I would do $1,000 as the minimum. But they do 1, 2, or 3, or 4.
Yeah, and all this stuff you want to say not only within the letter of the law, but with the intent of it. Right, so if you have a little wiggle room here and there, and you try to wiggle around, and one person gets pissed, and they try to hold you accountable for it, and I mean just ethically, I mean you 2 years later they're either still there and they're going to keep paying and they're locked in, and frankly if they don't want to do another 2 year extension, you can jack the rate up and tell them that, and it's reasonable, right? So it's there's no particular downside to that. It's just like you don't have people drop out with a 90-day clause any more than the year contract. Same principle.
If your rate was $350 on the master leadership program on a 2 month cycle, if they did 1 year, then it might be $450, kind of like you do on your other thing. So it would be an easy deal. And it gives them the incentive to sign for the 2 years. But you'd have a lot of people that at the end of that 2 years, they're going to be not at black belt yet, so they're going to stick with it to black belt. And so they'll automatically, in that cycle, if you can get them to that point, 80% of them are going to continue anyway.
because you planted that seed of black belt is so powerful that and just like the parents plant that seed of you got to get your college degree or even a high school degree. I mean, you got to get that degree.
The way I phrase my leadership program now is I pitch them a 4-year program and I say, you know, it's a 4-year program, and what I'm looking for is a 4-year commitment that can only allow us to write 2 years of papers, so I'm going to do that in 2 years or write some more. And that's how
I I think you're having a tendency to use terminology that's the way you think, not the way they think. Okay? And you've got to be using the conversation that's going on in their head, not the understanding that you have of it. Okay? And see, if I'm training, again, when you're talking about the college education and a master's degree or a bachelor's degree, you're talking about getting your degree, you're talking about getting your master's degree, you're talking about getting your MD. You're not talking about it being, what would it be, 8 semesters. You know, you're not talking about it being 12 semesters. You're not talking about it being 4 years, right? And so I'd much prefer it be, you know, and my terminology is black belt and beyond because we're enrolling them in second-degree black belt. Right. The reason I'm doing that is I don't want them to go, I'm done when they get their black belt. And what is it the kid wants? He wants to get his black belt. What do the parents want? He wants to get his black belt. What's the only limitation on that? Well, is it going to be, you know, for the rest of his life? Or how long does it take? Well, you know, 3 to 4 years. And even some of this stuff, the more definitive you make it, the more it works in your disadvantage. Well, how long is it going to take for him to get his black belt? I don't know. You know, 3.5, 4, 4.5 years, depends on how smoothly he progresses and how consistently it is. You know, but what we're going to do is enroll him to get to black belt and beyond, and obviously he's not going to get to black belt and drop out. So this actually takes him to second degree, and we'll talk about third and fourth degree, you know, as we get closer to that. And so, see, the whole terminology is about pre-framing the follow-through and the ongoing continuity of the thing. Okay? I mean, because I don't want to enroll for 4 years of anything, but I do want to get my black belt. See what I'm saying? So, and we all have a tendency to do that. When you're in a sales situation, you tend to start thinking in your terminology rather than in theirs, mm-hmm. right? And so the more you can rephrase it, and I hear it all the time. We get together with staff, and we train them on intros and one thing or another, and then they start using those terms on the students. Now, they don't know what that means. You know, we're going to bring you into an introductory class, which means, and you explain to them what it's all about, and we'll let you do a couple lessons, and then we'll go through the details of the program. That's more explaining to them what it's all about from their terminology rather than yours.
Thank you.
Is that computer clean enough for you now?
Not yet.
Is that a new one?
It was. It's newer.
It was until he opened the box
it's
and started
new
using
for me,
it.
Yeah. It's not new anymore.
I'll tell you what, it looks brand new. You do a hell of a job over there.
Well, that's the thing I like. See, I like those keys better because this one's got like this gloss thing and it's got fingerprints all over it, and I just can't stand it. Kind of like Monk, I guess.
I do the same thing on mine. I have a shiny one too.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Mine's a Toshiba too. It must be something about Toshiba.
It
must be the
it.
Hidden neurosis.
Is that it?
That the user has.
Mine even has like flames on it. You know, kind of like a cousin.
I have no neurosis.
Okay. Any last thing we should do before taking a break for the night?
I'm impressed at his grossness without even
initiate. As screwed up as he is, he's still bringing in a fair amount of money.
You guys can straighten me out.
I'm telling you, it should be $100,000 a month school.
Okay.
And we haven't even talked about how convoluted his program is.
Oh my God, I love it.
What's that?
Explain to him. Give him the 5-second explanation of how your
schedule
and programs work.
What's my style? It's Kempo based.
Well, no wonder. Don't have to go.
No.
Every Kempo school is like that. Because they're all based off. By the way,
I wiped out one of my levels.
Yeah.
It's already done.
Okay, good.
Should I include that one in the explanation?
Yeah, you can explain how convoluted it was so that it looks less convoluted now.
You cleaned it up.
No, not much. But I eliminated one really, really easy mistake. So there's my class structure is like this. We have a first-year program for 3 and some 4 years. a small samurai program for 4 and 5 year olds, and another program for 6 to 10 year olds, a program for 11 to 16 year olds, and a program for adults.
Do they come in the same class? How about all the belts? Are they all in different classes?
These guys don't get belts, so we're all in the same class.
They don't get belts?
Myself won't just.
No, the 3 to 5 year olds don't get belts.
Why?
They get patches because they're not asked to memorize anything. They do like a patch every month, so like this month is the roundhouse kick patch. And last
but
month
instead of the patch, what would be the difference of giving them a belt?
Wait.
Okay,
yeah. There's way too much for us to fix before we leave,
uh-huh.
But I was just giving you a little overview of why he does this. Yeah. Okay. Keep going.
My team
gets better.
Yeah.
My team in adult classes just have one class per level until black belt. There's a black belt class. Below black, they're all trained together. Below black, there's no belt distinctions in the classes until they get to black belt. There's a black belt class for all the black belts in the school.
So there's another black belt class and a black belt class.
Right. For 6 to 10 year olds, it's differentiated. By belt level, because I have a lot of those guys.
Why do you have a 6 to 10 year old class separate from a...
We have 7 to 12, I understand that. 6 and under.
Yeah,
we do, but they're in the same class, it's just 7 to 12.
Because 11-year-olds socialize like teenagers and 9-year-olds don't.
Yeah.
Well, that's why our teens and adults are together, 13 and up are together.
Yeah.
That's way too complicated.
And our 12 and under together. That's
something. So,
basically, not just...
Well, you let parents... take which class?
Was that the parents take the adult class? I don't want the parents train the kids.
That's a stupid thing.
We let the parents, but
yeah.
And we have classes even within that.
Yeah.
We have some classes that are kids only, some that are adults only, and then some that are called family classes where they train together.
Yeah. I have an adult class in parallel with my kids' classes because I have 2 of them. So that's how we manage that.
Wow.
But
2 floors is good.
It is. That's why you have 17 damn staff.
Yeah, it's true.
But I would venture to say that school is personality driven.
But how
the
many
success of that school is based on? Are you doing all the teaching all the classes? You've got some good instructors.
I do have very good instructors.
Yeah. You get a lot of them, but you got some good ones. But that's why.
Yeah, we run really I should use our terminology, little ninjas class, since we own that trademark. So a little ninjas class, which means you can't mainstream into the kids class yet. Okay. And then a family class. So parents and kids can take class together, and then adult class. And then each of them are separated into orientation level 1, level 2, level 3, and black belt.
Yeah.
So
a whole lot more differentiation than we actually have.
Yeah.
Well, the only thing I would see with yours right off the bat is with those little guys, belts mean more to them than the older guys. Even though probably doesn't, but those guys.
I see a problem with the age subset differentiation that way. I know, like, Melody preaches that, but I think it's.
You don't need it. You can do it, but
I got rid of the bottom level, so now it's anyone 5 and under is in 1 program until they qualify for the kids belt program.
Yeah.
On a 6 to 10.
Are the classes the same price?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I would give them a belt. Now, you can do your own special belts for them.
Yeah, do twice as many little belts for them or something, but they got to have some rewards.
The distinction for my belted kids is my belted kids are required to remember material cumulatively, whereas my little guys aren't required to remember anything cumulatively. They just have to achieve that.
How do your belts go for your regular kids?
You want that word?
White, gold, green.
Yeah, yellow, white, yellow, orange, purple, blue, blue, pink, stripe, green.
So why don't we do the same thing?
Why don't we work on him tomorrow? We'll work on him tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't think that's an advantage to me. I think what I'm doing right now is actually better.
A patch is better than a belt?
I think so. Because it's non-cumulative knowledge, so the rotating curriculum works a lot better for that. And
non-cumulative knowledge.
Because if you're testing for green belt in my school, you have to remember everything from white to green.
Okay.
Whereas in a small samurai class, you're not required to remember anything you learned 3 months ago. You just have to know what to do in this part of the patch. And once you've collected six patches, as long as one of them is a self-control patch, you can go up and start learning stuff from the belt class.
If you have to know everything from white to green to go to green,
yeah.
And what's next about that to green?
Brown.
Brown is after green?
Yeah.
And then to go for brown, you have to know everything up to brown?
Yeah.
And how about your kids that go to school, when they're in the 4th grade, do they have to know everything from 1st grade, 4th grade to go to 5th grade? In elementary school, then?
Yes.
In your area? They do.
Well,
they have a cumulative test.
Well,
in elementary
to some degree, yes.
the elementary schools in your Connecticut?
Well, yeah, if you're doing division, you need to understand how to add this trade.
Well, yeah, but if you're doing the most advanced form, you had to learn the front stands.
They don't make you retest for first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade to go to the fifth grade. You don't have to go back and review all those. To get to the fifth grade, you had to know all that. You had to pass all of that. So why do you have to do all of it? You follow me? We used to do it ourselves.
Yeah.
To our black belt test. They had to do all the forms. They had to do everything. But there's no point in it other than what happens is they do a whole lot of stuff poorly rather than a little bit much better.
Well, see, you guys have gone a different way. You have a lot of stuff in your curriculum.
Uh-huh.
I have a lot less stuff in my curriculum, and they do it well, and they remember it all. I have 12 techniques to black belt and 10 forms. So
yeah, that's about the same as everybody.
Yeah. It's not a lot different.
10 forms, that's about what we did.
But the... I think the distinction you're making that we're not making is if I start when I'm 3, by the time I get to black belt, I'm probably really good, and when I'm 4, I'm probably still a little spastic, right? And so you're making more of a distinction about their intermediate achievement than their long-term achievement. And I'd rather have them start when they're 4, be a little spastic when they're 5, and be phenomenal when they're 7 or 8. So if you're differentiating, why not treat them a little differential by age rather than by what the process is, if that makes sense. So in other words, you get to the test, and what the 5-year-olds have to do is a little bit less rigorous than what a 12-year-old has to do.
Well, because my experience has been is that for 5-year-olds, 70% of them can do my curriculum just fine,
mm-hmm.
and 30% of them just can't.
Okay.
And so I used to teach the kids the curriculum, mm-hmm. and I had a 30% failure rate. And what that meant is either I had to lower the standards for everybody or what I did is I said, okay, well, let's have the small samurai program. What that does is it qualifies them for the kids program. And when they're good enough to go in the kids program, if they're 4 or 5, then they can do that.
So you do graduate them out of there.
Yeah, they can graduate out of
there. Okay, that's
It's a goal.
I thought you were sacrificing everybody for the best.
If the goal is to mainstream them, we're saying the same thing. Yeah.
I mean, very few 4-year-olds do it, honestly.
Well, what I would call that is a developmental program.
Yeah.
And they're in a developmental program until we see that they develop the skill levels.
Yeah, but the overarching principle is an awful lot of times you can get the same level of results with 12,000 less in the budget, or with half as many complications, or with half as many people. And a lot of times when you slim down the number of complications, slim down the number of people, slim down all the different things that you're doing, not only does it get the same level of results, but it improves the results. I think in terms of the big trend in the industry a few years ago was having 5 different curriculums. Maybe it still is. But I didn't ever see any of the schools that were doing the biggest numbers that were doing it that way. They might have a couple things going on, but mostly they didn't have 10 different things going on. And a lot of the ones that had 10 different things going on were just overcomplicating their life. And again, you had several things going on that, didn't cost justify themselves, didn't time costify themselves. And as you start wiping those things out, your life will get easier and your gross for student.
Well, I've started a subdirectory called Project Simplify.
Yeah,
so
there you go.
The way you're doing it is actually the way we're doing it.
Yeah.
Is we have a little kids program.
In the meantime, we better break.
And, well, y'all can go. I'll talk to you. I'll talk to you.
Or we can do it tomorrow.
No.
How's that for you?
No.
We're here to share knowledge. He's on a roll.
Yeah.
But the only difference is we do belts. We have a different set of belts for them. But the cumulative of that is they get to be a green belt, and when they hit the green
belt, you guys
start
with
that mainstream and do the others.
At the same time?
Some of the kids know because they develop earlier. So they graduate earlier into the
That'll be 9 tomorrow.
And then they go into the mainstream.
So they have these other belts, so at least they have a belt like the other kids.
You know what I don't like about that, though, is that the same way.
Correct.
They got their white belt with the green stripe or whatever it is, and then you're going back into like white belt, and then they test back up to green.
So 9 tomorrow, 8:15 in the lobby, more
or less. They get these patches. They get a sticker every class, and then they get a patch once a month when they test on it. And their patch is either the you did a patch or the patch is the you didn't do a patch, so they don't really know the difference.
See, we follow something like Grandmaster Smith. We do a Dragons program, which is our 3, 4, or 5-year-olds. They get white belt with a yellow stripe, white belt with an orange stripe, white belt with a green stripe. We never, ever, ever put them back to a white belt. When they program out of that program and they move into our kids program, the stuff that they learned in our Dragons program is everything they would have needed on our regular program to become a yellow belt.
Correct.
Where it takes my normal students, you know, 12 weeks to learn that material, it takes a dragon about a year. Yeah. 6 months, 2 years, whatever.
And we do the same thing.
If they're ready to move up, we just throw them up in the next class with that belt.
If they do the normal going along the ways, we never drop them back a belt. And so they constantly feel like they're progressing forward because they are making a step. They have something that represents that progress.
Right. And the parents like to see that.
Yeah.
They like to see that belt change.
Like you said, you do less curriculum. We do the same thing. Like that curriculum that took a year to do for everybody else, for 3 months for everybody else or 2 months, that it takes them a year to do it. But they're doing other fun things along with it.
Right, right.
So, you know, we're developing skill. We have skill sets that they learn where we're practicing balance and coordination and reflexes and things like that. We have games that they do that are karate games, not just playing, but things that will develop.
Right, we do all of that.
Physical skills. That.
Yeah. What I do is I teach them all the fundamental skills only from white to green belt in my regular program. So all the footwork, all the kicks, all the punches, all the courtesy terms, we teach that stuff to them. We just don't have them memorize the sequences. And then when they get to the next program, they have all the ingredients, so they need to memorize the sequences. So I got a 5-year-old kid. What's the big challenge of a 5-year-old kid mixed in with 10-year-old kids? Usually their ability to either physically do the movement if they're uncoordinated or to memorize the movement. Mm-hmm. So we've taken care of item one, and item two comes along as they come along. But they have a big advantage because they're not working on trying to develop the physical skill because they walked into it. So I'm actually real happy with the way that program is structured out.
I think it's your concept of because you're not learning sequences means that you cannot earn a belt. That's the only thing I have a problem with.
Yeah, no. What they do is they just earn patches down their pants.
With no belt.
With no belt.
Not even a white belt.
No, but they're psyched to get the white belt.
They what?
They're psyched to get the white belt.
They're
excited to get the white belt.
But did they get a white belt?
When they complete the program, which is usually 6 months.
Okay. So that takes 6 months for a kid to get a white belt.
Yeah. And they're either too young to care.
okay.
Or. Am I fighting that much?
It's determined to conversion.
Yes. Which might be.
For what it's worth, our 3 to 4-year-olds, they get a white sash, and they get chevrons every 3 weeks. Something. As long as they get something more.
Yeah, I agree.
Are you driving back to the hotel eventually?
I sure am.
Get to lunch with you. Okay.
It's probably about time to think about dinner, too.
Thank you.
congratulate you on your I never earned you a success. I mean, I agree with some of the things you do, but I don't earn you a success. Obviously, you get your numbers there and you've got good success. So all of it's worth it.
Well, and you know, it doesn't mean there's not a better way to do it when you're there.
Obviously, everybody's happier. They wouldn't be signing up, and they wouldn't be doing that other stuff. So, and keeping them happy is the key. I tell the instructors that all the time. It's the personality of the instructors. It's like, it's not, you know, I tell them, it's not what you teach them, it's how you teach them. You can have them excited standing on their head. That means they're wanting to do it, you get them excited. So if you keep them excited, they're going to stick with the program. It's when they're not excited, they're bored, it's not fun. And anything you can do, whether it's patches, stickers, belts, or anything, is going to help perpetuate that excitement and that motivation to work towards whatever that carrot is. You know, some kids don't like carrots. You know, you have an apple. You know, other kids like, but if there's something, and that's why some kids like belts, and some like patches, and some, so it just depends on whatever gets them excited. Thank you. Yeah, but, your upgrade program, if you just kick that into gear, because the way your system is now, it's very difficult to duplicate. And when I say duplicate, to bring somebody in and try to teach them that, how to run a program like that, if they hadn't gone through the program themselves all the way through, it would be very difficult to teach it to someone else.
Well, maybe.
There's a lot of detailed stuff. It's bad or good, it just means that it's a little more complicated with all the classes and all the different stuff.
But yeah, it's way more complicated than many of the
you try to make it duplicatable, you try to make it keep it as simple as possible. But your basic concepts, I mean, obviously your rapport with the students is good, the rapport with the parents is good.
I said this not just in my school, but also
And it seems like that you probably get a lot of referrals too. Yeah, I would say because they're all happy and excited, so they're going to want to share it.
Yeah, but if I get some systems, I'd like to double my school.
so it looks like we're losing the grant.
Well,
yeah,
we're
going to so, do you want the school funds to be just that we're doing at that stage, or?
Well, the question would be is whether they have the information about joining the performers in the package or whether it means that I'm studying. That would be the question. So, it's either the, like, the evaluation all the way I would tend to separate it out.
Okay,
yeah,
what's
we do
next?
The. Yeah.
Okay, that's good. I can handle that. Okay. I'm not exactly sure what we're doing. The way he's got set up is he's got three times 10 by 2 to 1 plus 2. Right? He's got three options to choose from. So he's going to be watching out for the option three. So I'm a little basically what you're offering is these three packages, this one is by two of kind of you can fill the three questions.
I think it probably needs to scrap this form and start fresh.
Yeah, I see. Well, I tell you what, I want to do this.
Maybe. Probably option A is any one of the three. Option B is the bad question. And then they can choose, you know, A, B, or C. And choose.
Yeah, I don't want to go to the
theory, just anything that happens next to the number of money.
Yes.
Here's your recorder thing.